Thank you, and please be seated. For staff, petitioners, and members of the public who are participating, our procedures will be as follows. The agenda is broken down into several parts. First, notices, proclamations, and acknowledgments. Next, the consent agenda, which consists of items for which the applicant is in agreement with the staff recommendation and there are no known objections. This is followed by regular business, old business, and adjournment. For each agenda item on the regular business, the staff will make a presentation. The staff presentation will then be followed by a presentation from the petitioner should they elect to do so. The petitioner will be allotted a time frame of no more than 20 minutes. The board may then ask questions of the petitioner or staff for clarification. Afterwards, the floor will be open for public comment. If you wish to comment on the item that the board is considering at the time, members of the public that are in person must fill out a speaker card and give it to staff, a little blue speaker card. Ms. Helms holding up. If you're participating virtually, use the raise your hand feature on your computer on the screen. Do not use this feature until the item that you want to comment on is being considered. At the appropriate time, you will be recognized and staff will unmute your microphone. At the end of your allotted time, as determined by the chair, your microphone will be muted and the chair will recognize the next speaker. The total public comment time will be less than or equivalent to the petitioner's presentation time. Therefore, for those participating online, it is important that you use the raise your hand feature during the hearing on that item if you want to speak on a petition. Once the floor is closed for public comment on a petition, no additional public speakers will be allowed. If you are not certain you want to speak, still use the raise your hand feature or if in person, fill out the speaker card. You have the option to decline when your name is called. After public comment, the petitioner will have the opportunity to rebut and then address any additional needed questions by the board. And finally, the board will make a decision. All right, I need a motion on the agenda.
Cole's motion to amend the agenda to include an appointment of a nominating committee.
Oh, second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right.
Cole's motion to approve the agenda as amended.
Oh, second.
All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? There are no notices, proclamations, or acknowledgments. There are several items that have been requested to be removed from the final agenda. 104, 108, and 114 Albion Street special use permit for a place of worship has been asked to be removed from the agenda. Is there anyone here to speak on that topic? All right. We also have a flume amendment from conservation and residential general to residential general. At 1800 East 63rd Street. Is there anyone here to speak on that item? Okay, we have a map amendment to rezone from RSF 6 to RMF 216, 1800 East 63rd Street. And no one here to speak on that item? Finally, master plan amendment at 1025 West Gwinnett Street. Is there anyone here to speak on that? All right. I'll entertain a motion.
Cole's motion to remove items 1 through 4 from the final agenda.
Bull second.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. We have no consent agenda items. We do have two old business items. The first one is special use permit, principal use parking facility, 0 Bull Street, 12, 14, and 16 East 40th Street.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the board. Roger, you must have turned the volume up. I hear myself loud and clear. All right, so our very first item today is making its second appearance. Actually getting that ready. Here we go. So this is a special use in association with these four parcels on your screen, 0 Bull Street, 12, 14, and 16 East 40th. And these parcels have been used for parking in association with a number of businesses over the years. Most recently, they were used in association with the businesses at 2400 Bull Street. And so Mr. McCorkle has returned with the requested zoning certification letter from the City of Savannah, indicating that the off-street parking requirement for the businesses within that building comes to a total of about 12 spaces. And so essentially, the petitioner is requesting to use the balance of the spaces in that lot, which I believe approaches 50, if I'm not mistaken, as a principal use parking facility. So these are parking spaces that are available to use for a fee in association with anyone visiting for any of the nearby businesses in this part of town, the Starling District. Just to again offer you a view of the future land use map, it is traditional commercial. The parcels are split zoned, traditional commercial one, and those that are adjoining to the east are zoned TN2, traditional neighborhood two. We can see from the Sanborn maps here that there has not been significant development on the portion adjoining Bull Street for at least going back to 1916. And gradually the dwellings that were on those to the east have kind of gone away. Google Street View offers us a view in 2007 and 2022 showing parking. And so with that, the standards here indicate that a special use is required to establish a principal use parking facility here. With that, staff is recommending approval. I'm happy to answer any questions. I'm going to go ahead and pull up Mr. McCorkle's slides if I can find them. Oh, they're there. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. The applicant is here, correct?
Yes.
Thank you. Robert McCorkle here on behalf of the petitioner. Yeah, we talked about this back in June. This has been a parking lot since the 50s. This came up as part of the city going around and trying to get business licenses issued for all of the existing public parking facilities around town. And ours was one of the ones that came upon. And so that's what prompted the application. At our last meeting, y'all had asked some questions about how many spaces were required and things like that. And so we went and got the ZCL, which hopefully was provided to you. I've got a copy of it attached. But basically, it confirms that we have to have 12 spaces for the required parking for 2400 Bull Street. There's about 45 spaces in the parking lot, and it just lays out basically that we have to have signage for the tenants in the parking lot. And so that signage actually does exist. There are about 11 signs out there currently limiting the parking to tenant parking only. We're required to have 12, but a couple of the spaces are still empty. And so I don't know that we necessarily have to have them reserved yet, but I know there are at least a couple more coming when the tenants take over the spaces. So we are meeting the requirements of the ZCL, and we support staff's recommendation for approval. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thanks. Are there any questions? Okay. I have a couple of questions.
Okay.
Is Brochu's part of the facility that would need parking spaces?
Yes. They were calculated. So the calculation of the parking is actually based on pre-NUZO because the project was originally developed before NUZO. And so the zoning confirmation letter took into account both the indoor square footage of the layout of the building as well as the outdoor space. And so the 12 does include Brochu.
Okay. And the new facility that's going to go in there, the bar.
Already calculated
takes that
in
into
there.
Account as well.
Yes, ma'am.
And you're listed as the agent on the business license. Do you own that property?
I do not.
Okay.
I'm the registered agent for the business itself.
Okay.
I am not, but it's funny, if you go to Recorder's Court, there might be 30 cases over there where I'm listed as the defendant because the city has taken on this process of listing the registered agent for the company as the actual person. But no, I do not own this at all.
Does Mr. Stringer own it?
He represents the owners of the property. I'm not sure if he specifically has a personal interest in it, but they do represent the owners, yes.
Okay. When his apartment complex is developed, is he fully parked?
He's fully parked for the apartment complex there. This is not related to what we're doing, but if you recall, we were here, I don't know how long ago that was, maybe last year or so, and we got approval to have parking actually in the property next door as well. There used to be a kind of junkyard behind a car repair service place over there, if you remember that. Mm-hmm. So that's also going to be additional parking for the apartment complex, which I think is beyond the number of spaces they're required to have.
Okay. All right.
I have a question.
Okay.
The 12 parking spaces that are set aside, are those paid parking in the same way that the rest are, but they just have a sign that says only? How does it work?
They're I'm not positive of the answer to that question. They are reserved to the tenants only. So the specific tenants have signs that only can park for that space. I think the idea of it is that it's going to be paid parking when it's not during the normal business hours of the tenants. Some of those parking spaces, the businesses are open during various times, but I don't believe that the tenants have to pay. But based on our conversations with the city, it seems like it's somewhat up to the landlord about how the spaces are charged for.
Whether the code allows, you know, the business to charge, you know, even if they're reserved for that right. business, the business can still charge.
It doesn't disallow it. I don't think it says anything unclear. In particular. Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Allie, did we have anybody who wanted to?
No, ma'am. There were calls this morning, but they're not online.
Okay.
Sorry. I just got someone raising their hand.
Okay.
It's Carolina Braunschweig.
Carolina Braunschweig. Would you go ahead, please? You have 3 minutes.
Done. Hello.
Please say your name for the record.
Carolina Braunschweig.
All right, go ahead.
I just wanted to raise my continued objection to the special use permit for mainly two reasons. One is the same reason that I mentioned both in my letter and at the last meeting. There continues to be sort of litter, trash, people sleeping and defecating on that property. And I wish that the owners, facilitators, managers of this property would take those concerns seriously, address the issue, tackle the issue, do something about the issue, because I think it's a health and safety issue for all the residents in the neighborhood. And while there is a patrol car that comes through maybe on the hour, it really only comes through when Brochu's operates. That's Wednesday through Sunday during sort of evening dinner hours. The rest of the time, there are people there all the time, and it feels really insecure. And if you're going to operate a business, I wish that you would do it with the integrity of a business owner who cares about the neighborhood. Secondly, the same forum group is the one building out on Bull Street. I'm not sure how many parking spaces they've taken up. I know I raised it in my letter, and I hate to use the word fair or unfair, but it doesn't seem right to let the same group who's already taken so much parking from the neighborhood continue to charge for parking in the neighborhood. And sort of coming from the previous conversation, it just seems crazy that between patrons, staff, vendors, etc., a space like Brochu's and the bar that's coming only need 12 spaces. That seems absurd. Those are my objections. Thank you.
Thank you. Would you like to respond?
The 12 spaces is what the requirement is, as confirmed by the city zoning administrator. It's good to have the parking there because it does provide additional parking spaces beyond the 12. We wouldn't be required to have any of them. As I mentioned in the last meeting, we could build buildings on these lots today and take away the parking completely. The commentary from the couple of neighbors about the parking primarily related to the fact that they did not think that we should have to pay for parking. They want to be able to use the parking on my client's property for free. I don't know quite how to respond to that. I think it's a hard argument to make that a pay-to-park public parking lot creates more of a parking problem in an area surrounded by residences. Those cars would otherwise be on the street. If we didn't provide the parking, we just need a business license in order to do it, in order to continue to do what we've been doing. So we believe having 43 spaces in this location is a great benefit to the area. It keeps those cars off the street, whether people are paying for it or not. And so we could do something else with the property. I suppose it could be developed, which would potentially put more cars onto the street. But we'd like to keep it the parking lot that it has been for the last 70 years and just be able to charge to do so.
I hear what you're saying. I do have some sympathy with the fact that, yes, Bull Street has been blocked off for a long time. Do we have any idea when that might change?
I don't have the time frame. And, again, the owners of this project and the owners of that project are two different sets of people. So there is a similar party involved in both, but it's not owned by the same people. So I don't know exactly what the construction timeline is.
Okay. So you're suggesting that maybe the residents need to get permitted parking, on-street parking, so that they don't have the folks from that would be in your parking lot parking on the street and blocking off their parking?
I don't know what the solution is for the neighbors as far as the ones that live around there. Again, I think having 43 parking spaces off street is better than not having 31 of those off street. And so I think this project and the approval of this actually alleviates the problem, doesn't add to it.
All right. Thank you. Any other questions? Go ahead.
Mr. McCorkle, could you address the issue that was raised even previously again today regarding litter, et cetera? And I know that, you know, there's a patrol car during business hours, and how do you control it after hours? And maybe lighting or cameras or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I'll relay that to my client. I mean, again, I think the parking lot looks pretty good. It's very well landscaped compared to the way it used to be. They do have patrols. I'll talk to them about that. I've been over there several times during the process of all of this, and I have not seen the trash or people sleeping in the parking lot. I was over there today. I have not seen that. I think if there are incidences of that are occurring, I would encourage, if someone could take pictures, they can certainly send it to me. I will make sure it gets to the client. Obviously, our tenants are parking in that parking lot. We don't want it to be a dangerous situation, and we certainly don't want it to look bad for our building either, which I think is a beautiful building. So if anybody wants to relay those issues to me, I'm happy to help try to facilitate a response.
All right. Thank you. Any other questions? Any discussion? All right. I'm entertaining a motion.
Cole's motion to approve staff's recommendation.
Cole's second.
All right. I have a motion and a second. Ms. Amick?
Yes.
Ms. Bowles?
Yes.
Mr. Coles?
Yes.
Mr. Irvin?
Yes.
Ms. Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Notrika?
Yes.
Mr. Plump?
Yes.
Mr. Welsh?
Yes.
Mr. Warwoody?
Yes.
I too say yes. Motion passes. All right. Our next agenda item is old business map amendment rezone from BL to BN 1402 Stiles Avenue.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, Karen Jarrett, and the members of the board. My name is Subhashi Karunaratna, and I'm a planner from Development Services, MBC. I will be presenting the staff findings and recommendations for 1402 Stiles Avenue. Here, the applicant is requesting a rezoning from business limited to neighborhood business. This item was heard for the first time in June 24th MPC meeting. And during the meeting, the board concluded that the applicant have to go back to meet the Cloverdale neighborhood and get the consent from the neighbors to narrow down the allowed uses for BN and remove anything that they think is undesired for this property. And the applicant has done so, and the agreement was to remove package stores, funeral homes, and tattoo parlors and services out of the use list. I will give you a quick recap of the nature of the request and the property. This property right here has an area of 0.76 acres, and the building you see here has been built in 1993 and has been used as a liquor store until 2005, according to the applicant. And after 2005, it was used as a convenience store. The applicant is proposing to use it as a laundromat, restaurant, and beauty supply store in addition to the convenience store. Under the existing zoning and the proposed zoning, convenience stores and restaurants are not non-conforming uses, and the main objective of this rezoning is to bring those uses into conformancy. Here you can see the subject property. in relation to I-16 and the Springfield Canal on the south. The end market arena is here on the north, and you can see the West Gwinnett Street. And here is the Cabo Village neighborhood, and Cloverdale neighborhood is in the south across I-16. This is the current status of the building. And if you talk about the zoning, the two properties adjoining towards the east are also zoned as business limited. In the north, there are some residential multifamily zone parcels, and majority of the proximity is zoned as TR2. And along the Gwinnett Street, there are some business, neighborhood business and limited business parcels. And on the further east, this is a planned development, which is currently vacant. And on the south, there's a conservation zoned parcel. If you look at the future land use, the future land use is commercial neighborhood, and it supports the existing zoning and the proposed zoning. Surrounding, there's a majority of residential single family parcels. So convenience stores are limited uses under the proposed BN zoning district because there are additional standards that apply under the section 8.4 that says such a use shall be 500 yards from a similar use, and the operating hours should be from 5 a.m. to 10 a.m. And the property should be located next to a collector or an arterial, and Stiles Avenue is a collector road, so all these conditions are met as of now. And restaurants are permitted under the BN zoning, but there have to be, there's a condition saying alcohol sales are limited on for on-premise consumption only. And on this map, you can see the subject property, again, I-16 and Market and the two neighborhoods. There is not many commercial uses which are neighborhood friendly and easily accessible by these two neighborhoods. And the staff believes that this location is has potential to be used as a neighborhood friendly commercial node, and the existing use of the convenience store and the proposed uses are suited here if they are maintained in a way that it's not negatively impacting the neighborhood. And per the request of the board and the neighbors, the petitioner has met the two neighborhoods in two occasions. And as I mentioned before, the applicant is agreeing to remove the package store, funeral home, or mortuary, and body art services out of the requested BN zoning district. With that, staff recommends approval for this rezoning, and the condition should follow to remove the uses given here. I would like to answer any questions if you have any.
Thank you. The applicant is here, correct? Could the applicant come forward?
Good afternoon. Parth Patel here on behalf of the property owners. As she said, we were here last meeting and we had a discussion about reaching out to Cloverdale, and I attended that meeting last Monday. And I mentioned that package store was on the list and they seemed very against that. And then I stated that we would be willing to take that off of the BN zoning because was the main thing that was expressed to me. And if you guys have any other questions, but based on the discussion that was had, that was clearly the main thing that they wanted to take off.
All right. Thank you. You can sit down.
Okay, cool. I wasn't sure if there's any questions.
You're good. I did want to recognize Mr. Mackey. Thank you for attending again. Glad to see you, a former member of our commission, chair of our commission in the past.
As always, Madam Chair, I'm happy to be here before you. And for all of the members that I know and that I don't know, you have an immense job. It's a tough job, may not seem like it, but it's very tough and very demanding, I understand. Mr. Patel is correct. He did meet with the Cloverdale Neighborhood Association last week, and Mr. Stevens, he holds the paperwork that was signed by each of the residents that was in attendance and how they voted. They all voted no, to my knowledge. I mean, you may have seen something, you may have the opportunity to see something that I don't, but to my knowledge, they all voted against the project, which leads us to pretty much, for lack of a better term, the ball being in your court as a board to decide how this should go. Again, our community's position was clearly that we just didn't want or did not think that a liquor store would be a good fit in that particular area, in that part of the neighborhood. We're not against liquor stores. We're simply trying to create some distance from liquor stores with residential areas. And I think that's something that's not, it's not odd to do that. I think that's the way that things need to go now. Liquor stores sometimes, not all of them, but some of them bring a different type of use that may not be a contrary, may not be palatable with what a regular neighborhood wishes to have. So it's nothing against the owner, nothing against the property owner. It's just the use that we're concerned about. So if all minds are clear, Madam Chair, I will ask, according to Mr. Patel at the meeting, not to quote him, but I may have it wrong, so I'm just trying to seek information. He said that he would drop his request for the liquor store and leave room for him to do something like a washateria, as I would call it. We called it when I was younger, a washateria, where you can come wash your clothes and dry your clothes. That's palatable. And perhaps there were a couple of other things. But my only question to you and the board is this. Being that this is a zoning change request, and let's say that Mr. Patel vacates the property at some point, does the use that he took off, does it come back into the actual use?
Mr. Mackey, no. If the board approves the zoning with the conditions, if they make a recommendation to this council to approve the zoning with the conditions attached, and if the city council approves the rezoning with the conditions attached, then if the property is sold tomorrow, whoever buys the property will not be able to open up a package store, a funeral home, or do any of the body services, because that goes with the zoning. They would have to go back through this whole process to add those uses back.
And so lastly, I am correct. That is his intent, to drop the issue of the package store. Am I correct?
Yes. That's what we have on
yes, ma'am. Approval. If that is his intent, and now if it's your wishes, and I pray to God it's your wishes, but you are the boss, I personally would be satisfied with that, and I know Cloverdale would be satisfied for that. I can't speak for Carver Village, but Cloverdale, that would be right up in the wheelhouse that they were expecting.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, I also have a speaker card for Brianna Paxton.
Good afternoon, my name is Brianna Paxton. I play Ultimate Frisbee with Parth Patel and have been watching behind the scenes as he undertook this process for his family, and have been very inspired by his entrepreneurial spirit to go get beat up in public meetings to go forward with this. But I'm here today to offer a few pieces of insight I feel like we're missing in the last meeting. Sabash, you did mention it today, but I believe this property might have been incorrectly zoned in NUZO, just an administrative error that it was BL instead of BN, given that it was an existing convenience store when NUZO happened. Also, pretty much every other small commercial property in the neighborhood is already BN zoning. Corner of Stiles and Gwinnett, the car wash, the convenience store there, most all of the properties along the north side of Gwinnett going west from Stiles are already BN. So I think their property on the south side here not being BN is a little bit incorrect in keeping with neighborhood commercial. As Sabashi also mentioned, this does meet the future land use map, and the Carver Village Neighborhood Association is in support. I also want to mention One of the reasons I care about this area so much is that in 2021 and 2022, I walked every single property as part of the Canal District Historic and Cultural Resources Report that I helped author when I was employed at Ethos Preservation. That was an effort the city of Savannah had undertaken as part of the Canal District Master Plan. That 2022 document later won the Outstanding Planning Document from the Georgia Planning Association. I encourage you all to go read it. It shares a very detailed history of this area. And one thing that is certain is that this area has had a heavy industry and heavy it's suffered from being segregated by roads, railroads, canals over time. And so I think this issue of not having access to downtown, not having access to resources that other neighborhoods have access to, is a continuing theme. And I understand very much why some of these neighbors were upset. You know, they get to look at the $150 million arena we were able to build, but they don't have sidewalks all the way down Stiles. They get to look at the Pearlie Smith School still sitting there vacant. And the waterworks is still not rehabbed. So I encourage you to vote yes for this because Parth and his family are trying to invest in this small scale neighborhood focused way. And I think it really does fit economic revitalization for the neighborhood that doesn't push residents out. So thank you.
Thank you. All right. I also have a card for Gwen Williams. Ms. Williams, are you still here? Would you like to speak? Okay. Please come up and state your name for the record.
Gwendolyn D. Williams.
I'm sorry?
Gwendolyn D. Williams.
Thank you. If you'll speak into the microphone just a bit and share with us your thoughts.
I live in Cloverdale, and I was at the meeting last week. And only thing I can say is that we agree with what Mr. Patel was saying, that he did not want a liquor store there. You know, that's just about all, you know. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
All right. Do we have anybody online?
No, ma'am.
All right. Thank you. Would the applicant like to come up and rebut or remark? Okay. I'm up for discussion or?
I have a question of staff.
I'm sorry.
If you could pull up the map again. No. Well. Okay, I'll go with that one. That looks like a good one. Now I can't see where I am.
Okay.
Okay. You mentioned that a convenience store can't be within 500 yards of another convenience store?
Yes, ma'am.
Is that 500 yards to Gwinnett?
Oh, yes. It's far. It's safe from 500 yards from Gwinnett.
Okay, because I know, I think because it was mentioned in the last meeting, not this meeting, and I think it was just brought up that there is another convenience store where that Citgo station is.
Right here?
Yeah.
I mean, yes. So we measured the distance to the church in the last meeting, and it was 600 feet.
I think that only includes alcohol sales, not convenience stores. I think we're getting those confused.
I was going to say, I think the issue with regards to distance was relevant when there was discussion about having alcohol sales. Now that that's not the case, then it's not, it's a moot point.
No, I'm looking at D21. That's what I was looking at.
500 yards from the same use.
500 yards, not 500 feet. That's what I was. I did notice it wasn't on the map the last time, so that's why I was asking.
And again, And it might be how it's written in the ordinance. I have to look at that closer. But generally, the 500 yards, especially when it's yards, is more relevant to looking at alcohol sales. Because when the state looks at licensing, that's how they measure. They don't measure in feet. They measure in yards. So I think that's what that kind of is lending itself
to.
Yeah,
and it's different because you see down in 8.7, they're talking about alcohol sales. So that's why I thought it was just the convenience store. It says convenience stores have additional standards.
It is an existing convenience store now, isn't it?
It is. And so even if this were something that was relevant, that use would be grandfathered in from the standpoint of it being an existing convenience store.
All right. Any other questions? Any discussion? Ready for a motion?
Cole's motion to approve the staff's recommendation to include the condition of excluding package store, funeral home, or mortuary, or body art services from the use.
Jeff and Enrique, second.
All right. I have a motion and a second. Ms. Amick?
Yes.
Ms. Bowles?
Yes.
Mr. Coles?
Yes.
Mr. Irvin?
Yes.
Ms. Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Nochica?
Yes.
Mr. Plunk?
Yes.
Mr. Welsh?
Yes.
Mr. Wywoody?
Yes.
The two say yes. Motion passes. All right. Our next item is a regular business variance to a general development plan, 621 Jefferson Street.
All right. Good afternoon, Madam Chairman and members of the board. My name is Sadish Laurent with Development Services, here to talk about 621 Jefferson Street. This is a variances for development plan. The petitioner is seeking MPC approval of a variance to the required minimum lot area in association with a non-conforming subdivision for the construction of two single-family attached dwellings in the DR zoning district. The parcel will be subdivided into three new lots with an existing two-family structure remaining on one of the parcels. And then two single-family attached dwellings will be constructed on the newly created vacant lots. Here are the zoning and future land use maps. So the subject parcel is currently conforming in the DR zoning district for its current two-family use, and it has about 4,500 square feet on the current lot. It is a corner lot with 100 feet of frontage on Jefferson Street and then 45 feet of depth on North Street. Its future land use is a traditional neighborhood. The parcel additionally contains a two-family structure of historic character built in or about 1900, and it has indicated as having a building footprint of 1,360 square feet. So here is the survey of the property. The petitioner is proposing to subdivide this parcel into three new lots. The existing two-family structure will remain on this parcel, which will have a lot area of about 2,250 square feet. The new property line will be created here, leaving a 5-foot side yard setback. And then these two new parcels as well are currently would be vacant. And then the petitioner is proposing, single family attached dwellings on both of them. And they will have, lot areas of about 1,125 square feet. Additionally, the site does have a COA approved for the subdivision as well. And then just north of the property are condos. South is a four-family residence. It's all residences in the east and west as well. And then here are a couple photos of the property. So on the leftmost photo is the current two-family residence. And then on the right one is the vacant area that are the proposed two new parcels. Here are the standards that are being requested to vary today. They're requesting to reduce the minimum lot area from 1,200 square feet to 1,125 square feet in the DR zoning district. So moving on to the analysis portion, the requested variance does have a minor departure for the zoning district, but it does not represent a very large departure from like the minimum standards that are established for the development of single family homes. There are no special conditions besides the existence of a home of historic nature. The request is likely financial in nature, and it will confer special privilege on the applicant. So with that, MPC staff recommends approval of the requested variance with the condition that if it is approved, the petition number associated with the variance request shall be recorded on the plat. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Is the applicant here? Would you like to come forward? State your name for the record, please.
Hi, I'm Beth Wise.
I'm sorry.
Beth Wise.
Would you like to go ahead and do you have any comments you'd like to make?
I grew up in Savannah. The property has been in my family since the 1970s. I'd like to come back and not live in a little house, but construct a house for myself and one next door. That's what we're trying to do. The houses will face Jefferson Street, and we're hoping to do, we haven't talked, we've talked to architects but have not engaged anyone pending approval.
All right, thank you.
Sure.
And I do have a couple of speakers here. I have a Stephen Park. You can go ahead and sit down for now. Stephen, I'm sorry, I'm sure I got your wrong, last name wrong. State your name for the record.
Good afternoon. It's Stephen Norton, Tattenhall Street resident. The reason for my questioning today was a couple of different points was the detail that's involved with the project. If I back up, our property is directly across Jefferson Street from Tattenhall. And at the time of this invite, we don't have the details on what the construction is actually that's planned for the subdivision. So a couple of concerns are height requirements, where is there going to be parking for all these units? Because Jefferson right now, to my understanding, isn't really a street that allocates off-street parking. Because it's bi-directional traffic. So I was hoping if there's an opportunity to get a little bit more detail on the project so that the residents could understand what the plans are.
All right, thank you. Maybe we can get that after we have citizens speaking. All right, I also have Todd Gerken. Please state your name for the record.
Gilbert William Todd Gerken, and I, like Mr. North, live on Tattenhall Street, catacornered across Jefferson. My house backs up to this property. And my questions actually mirror yours. We don't have a lot of details, and I guess one question that was answered is the actual variance, which is just 75 square feet. For the imprint, but over the footprint, but parking, how tall is the property going to be? Are there going to be garages? Historic character of the property, what's the construction schedule?
So. All right, thank you. And go ahead, Mr. Morrow.
Yeah. Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the board, I do think it's reasonable that there are some questions that residents in this area would have because they're used to seeing petitions that come through much more developed. I'd just like to highlight that we are talking about a subdivision at this stage, and so the petitioner has not yet fully, as she stated, engaged an architect, engaged all of those professionals to flesh out a design. What I will say, because we're only talking about the subdivision, we're not talking about changes to the actual zoning. Any of the standards that are associated with the DR zoning district are those that would apply here. And so we would expect that everything with the exception of the lot area minimum related to this development to continue to hold true. If for some reason we did see that there were additional units that were requested beyond what staff sees today, just to understand, anything that is at three units or greater is going to require a site development permit. And so this would go through our standard site development process. And we could expect to see all of those details either displayed and met, or we would see them come back for this board to address as a site plan related variance. If it is single family, then again, they would just pull a building permit and they would go through that process and this body would not necessarily be further involved. But all of those details that are being requested would come later.
And they would be required to maintain the historic character of the neighborhood.
It would
provide
also
off-street parking, et cetera, et cetera.
Yep.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
And also be limited with the height for that area as well.
Exactly. Anything that's permitted in DR would be expected for this development.
Thank you. Hopefully that helps a little bit. Any questions by the board? Any discussion? No, I'm not. Unless there's someone online. Is there anyone online?
No, ma'am.
All right. Thank you. So I'm ready for a motion. Did you want to come up and say anything about the property?
All I wanted to say was, having grown up in Savannah, I completely respect the historical nature of the area, and I would not want to put a blight on the neighborhood. and would only want it to look good and conform to what the area looks like. I mean, there's a tremendous amount of variety of what's there, but I would like it to look like it belongs. And there is street parking in front of the existing dwelling, and there is parking on Lorch, but I would leave it up to the architects to figure out the best way to make this work in a way that's compatible.
Thank you.
Sure, thank you.
All right, I'll entertain a motion.
Cole's motion to approve staff's recommendation.
Bowles, second.
All right, I have a motion and a second. Ms. Amick?
Yes.
Ms. Bowles?
Yes.
Mr. Coles?
Yes.
Mr. Irvin?
Yes.
Ms. Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Nochika?
Yes.
Mr. Plunk?
Yes.
Mr. Welsh?
Yes.
Mr. Warwoody?
Yes.
I too say yes. Motion passes. All right. Our next item is a variance to general development plan for 480 Geomeyer Avenue.
So this is for 480 Geomeyer Avenue. The petitioner is seeking MPC approval of variances in association with the construction of an amenity building in the PD zoning district. This is located in Eastern Wharf. They are requesting to reduce the minimum western interior side yard setback from 3 feet to 0 feet and to reduce the minimum building frontage from 70% to 63%. So here are the zoning and flume maps. The subject parcel is currently conforming for a non-residential use in the PD zoning district. It has about 0.10 acres or 4,257 square feet. It has a building frontage, or it has a lot frontage of 33 feet and 129 feet of depth. The parcel is currently vacant. Like I mentioned, this PD is in Eastern Wharf, which has a future land use designation of downtown expansion. Eastern Wharf is a planned mixed use development with commercial, single family, and multifamily uses. Also, good to note that this application has received a letter of support from a nearby resident. And then here is a screenshot of the major subdivision. So this parcel right here is what they're proposing to do. And then here are the standards that they are proposing to receive variances from. So one of them being to reduce the minimum western side yard setback from 3 feet to 0 feet, and then also to reduce the minimum building frontage from 70% to 63%. And then here's also an amenity layout to see more specifically what they're doing on the property. This is it right here for context. So moving into the analysis portion, the requested variances are not consistent with the intent of the Eastern Wharf development standards. However, there are a few things that do offer this. So for one, there is a 30-foot drainage easement on the eastern side of the parcel, which can be seen here, in addition to a 10-foot access easement right next to that. On the rear, there is a tieback easement on the rear of the property. And so all these together are an encumbrance on the parcel, as the buildable space on this parcel is reduced. Additionally, the petitioner does state that there is currently a 6-foot separation between buildings. The variances will not confer special privilege on the petitioner. So with that, MPC staff does recommend approval of the requested two variances. Happy to answer any questions.
All right, thank you. Is the applicant here?
For the record, my name is John Gaskin. I'm vice president of the owner of the property. I'm not going to say a whole lot because I think the variances are pretty straightforward and the presentation was very clear. I think in terms of the building separation, what happens when we platted the subdivision, instead of putting the property line, so to speak, halfway between the amenity and the house next door, who the letter came from, not objecting to this variance, the property line was shifted right against the amenity. So there is 6-foot separation required by law. Although we don't meet the letter of the law, we meet the intent of that ordinance. So the separation is there. It's just a matter of this property line existing askew toward the amenity itself. And again, the easements have caused us several issues in terms of the design and the constraints. It's a very tight site. But other than that, we think everything else complies. I'm here to answer any questions.
Are there any questions for the applicant or for staff? All right, do we have anyone to speak on this item?
No.
All right, thank you.
Okay.
Any discussion? All right, I'm open for a motion.
Call's motion to approve staff's recommendation.
Jeff Petrica, second.
All right, so I have a motion and a second. Ms. Amick?
Yes.
Ms. Bowles?
Yes.
Mr. Coles?
Yes.
Mr. Urban?
Yes.
Ms. Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Nochica?
Yes.
Mr. Plunk?
Yes.
Mr. Welsh?
Yes.
Mr. Wywoody?
Yes.
All right, I too say yes. Motion passes. Easy peasy. Our next item is a variance to a GDP at 430 Geomeyer Avenue.
Okay, so this is just down the street from the previous one at 430 Geomeyer Avenue. The petitioner is seeking MPC approval of a variance to the front yard setback in association with the construction of townhomes in Eastern Wharf. So they're requesting to increase the maximum front yard setback of multifamily dwellings from 12 feet to 40 feet. And then here is the property right here. This was the previous one, just for reference. So here are the zoning and flume maps. The subject parcel is currently conforming for multifamily dwelling use in the PED zoning district. It has about 0.29 acres or 12,545 square feet. The parcel has 98 feet of frontage and 129 feet of depth, and it is currently vacant. This PD is in Eastern Wharf, which has a future land use designation of downtown expansion. Once again, here is the subdivision. It's this parcel right here that they are requesting the variance for. And then here is the standard they are requesting a variance from. So the standards offer a minimum of 0 feet for a front yard setback and a maximum of 12 feet. They are requesting to increase that to 40 feet. And then here as well is the layout for 430 Geomeyer Avenue for the townhomes right here. The requested variance is not consistent with the intent of the Eastern Wharf development standards. However, the variance is consistent with the prevailing development pattern as the setbacks would align with the existing townhomes on the same block as the parcel right here. Additionally, as mentioned before, there is a tieback easement that encumbers the rear of the property. And so with that, MP staff recommends approval of the requested variance. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. The applicant like to come back up?
Yes, again, for the record, John Gaskin, Vice President, PMC, SRL, LLC. The reason for this particular request, when we bought the property, it was zoned for a PUD. And at that time, the site plan showed the same townhome all the way across the riverfront. And there's been concerns from the market that there was a need for that same not monotonous, I love the design of it, but some sort of variety of frontage on the riverwalk. And then also we found that the market demands now a little bit different price points and variety of product type in terms of living and style and who these appeal to. So these products that we're asking for the variance from, the front of it actually faces the riverwalk. But the front yard setback, the 12 feet, comes off Geomeyer, which is the street, which is the opposite side. So the reason for the request, obviously, is that we can get a consistent facade along, in terms of setbacks along the river park, I mean, the river walk. So the driveways will come in off Geomeyer. So in fact, that's the rear part instead of the front. And so these products are a little bit tall, a little bit different, but they do require a little bit of individual driveway. So the 40 feet allows us to get the consistent frontage along the river walk and get that better look, in my opinion. So other than that, unless there's some questions, that's all my presentation.
Thank you. And there's no one in the public to comment. All right, any discussion? I'm ready for a motion.
Call's motion to approve staff's recommendation.
Jeff Petrica, second.
All right, I have a motion and a second. Ms. Amick?
Yes.
Ms. Bowles?
Yes.
Mr. Urban?
Yes.
Ms. Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Nochica?
Yes.
Mr. Plunk?
Yes.
Mr. Welsh?
Yes.
Mr. Wywoody?
Yes.
I too say yes. Motion passes. All right. The next item we have is actually, there's two of them associated together. The first one is a future land use map amendment from residential suburban single family to commercial neighborhood. And the second one is the actual rezoning of that same parcel at 1103 East 69th Street. Go ahead.
Super thrilled to be here, first of all.
Good to have you.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, and all the members of the board and everyone present here. And there's a couple of petitions associated with 1103 East 69th Street, and I will take them one after the other for the it's essential to have separate votes. The first is the Flume Amendment. Let's get everyone on board and oriented as to where the site is. Over here, we can see what's highlighted in yellow is Waters, and you can see the Candler Hospital, and the more important W here is Wendy's, so it's right across. So now that we have an idea, first let us step into the Flume Amendment application. So firstly, the basics about the site. It is a 0.2-acre lot that is 90 by 100. It's like 9,000 square feet. And as we can see here, the existing and the proposed flume maps are here. What's in red is suburban commercial. What's in pink is neighborhood commercial. And what's in yellow is suburban residence, single family. We can see that the lot that is identified is right at the junction between neighborhood commercial and suburban single family residential. So the idea over here is to propose it to align with what's to the west, to align it to be neighborhood commercial. And looking into the 2040 Comprehensive Plan, it identifies Waters Avenue to be an urban transitional corridor, and it encourages incremental commercial infill, and it promotes walkability and supports low-intensity neighborhood serving businesses. Low-intensity over here being the key word, of course, because it lies at the junction between residential and commercial. It is, and the proposed amendment aligns with these goals by facilitating a commercial use at the scale of the neighborhood, because the proposed business is targeted to cater to the neighborhood, and the intensity is that of a restaurant. And I will dig deeper into the function itself, but at the Flume level, staff feels it is a reasonable evolution to the Flume of that. So the recommendation, staff recommends approval of the request to amend the future land use map from residential suburban single family to commercial neighborhood for the property located at 1103 East 69th Street. I will further talk about the zoning, but I'm happy to take questions regarding the Flume.
All right. Thank you. Is the applicant here?
Madam Chairman, my name is Bart Smith. I'm the civil engineer working on the project. The future land use, looking at it, we're not doing anything we're not spotting the land use change. I think it's consistent with what's proposed in the future. So.
Any questions for staff or for the applicant? All right. Y'all want to go ahead and do zoning before we make a motion?
Is there
Oh, I'm sorry. There are two speakers. Online I have Richard Macken. Would you like to go ahead? Please state your name for the record.
Richard, you're self-muted. Can you unmute yourself, please?
Mr. Macken, can you unmute yourself? All right, while you're trying to figure that out, we'll go ahead and do Tanya Mushaw. If you would state your name for the record, please.
Tanya, you can now unmute yourself.
Beth Besser here. It's Richard and Tanya.
Okay, we have Richard. Richard.
Dinema.
I'm sorry.
And Tanya Mishaw.
Richard Dinema and Tanya Mushaw.
Okay. All right. If you guys would like to speak together, that's fine with me.
I'll let Richard go ahead, please.
We're just concerned about the actual usage of that lot because we own the building on the opposite side of that 69th Street. We're at 5501 through 5509 Waters Avenue. And we just want to know what that lot is going to be used for. Because according to the change, it looks like it wants to be a restaurant with a drive-thru.
I think that the applicant is coming up to provide more information.
Currently, sir, we have the conceptual plan as a restaurant on that side of the opposite of you. And it will have, we're proposing a drive-through. We can get the actual stacking moving. We're kind of going ahead of ourselves with regard to the rezoning, but we're lacking adequate stacking, and we're most likely going to not move forward with a drive-through.
So where's the drive-through going to enter? Is it going to enter on 69th Street? Or is it going to enter on Waters and exit on Waters?
No, sir. It's going to enter on 69th. It'll be one-way traffic through the site and then exit on 70th.
How are you going to exit through there on 70th Street if Donato's is right next door?
Sir, we have a drive that we're putting in there, and it'll take a right-hand turn back towards Waters.
Okay, so you're not going to go from 69th to 70th exit. You're going to go from 69th and exit onto Waters.
Negative, sir.
Excuse me, but, sir, this is a request for a Flume amendment. Right now, the question is it appropriate to change the use on the Flume map to the land use map? The second part of this, if the board decides to approve that Flume amendment, will be whether to rezone the property to business neighborhood. So right now, your question is a bit premature because the board has to make a decision about that land use. The second thing
is that
just so that you know, so they need to take the first part of this first. And as far as the use is concerned, there is nothing that holds them to the use. The zoning is based on all the uses in the category, and that's what we will look at. And, you know, at this point, we don't know whether there's going to be a drive-through or not. There are some limitations with regards to that, so it's kind of a moot point at this point.
Okay, because my concern is if it gets approved to rezoning, then it is a possibility for him to put the drive-through there. Right now, it's zoned for office and institutional.
Right now, sir, the ordinance itself does not support having a drive-through. And if you would wait until we get to the rezoning part, you will see that there were conditions to address that.
We're just more concerned about the traffic that we already have.
I understand that, sir, but
yes,
again, I just want to be clear. This is a two-phase project or process, and we have given some thought with regards to the drive-through. And right now, they don't meet the requirements to have a drive-through, so it kind of is a moot point. That's what the applicant basically said to you.
Okay,
but
great.
I just am asking the board to first make the decision on whether you think it's appropriate to change the land use. And then after that, they can have more discussion about the rezoning request.
And if you'd like to stay online and ask questions during the actual map amendment or the zoning change, you can speak then as well. Okay?
Okay. Thank y'all so much.
Thank you. All right. Okay. Any discussion? Any questions for staff or for the applicant? I'll entertain a motion.
Sorry, one more thing. The only concern that I had in the recommendation was that they go to the community between here and city council. And just in general, I would prefer if they go to the community before they get here, because I feel like this is a better forum for them to have those kinds of questions answered. So I appreciate that that recommendation is made, but I would just prefer that to be pre-MPC, not post-MPC, pre-city council. But with that, I make the motion to approve the staff's recommendation.
Both second.
All right, I have a motion and a second. Ms. Amick?
Yes.
Ms. Bowles?
Yes.
Mr. Coles?
Yes.
Mr. Urban?
Yes.
Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Notrika?
Yes.
Mr. Plunk?
Yes.
Mr. Welch?
Yes.
Mr. Wywoody?
Yes.
I too say yes. All right, that takes care of the future land use map amendment. Now for the rezoning. Map amendment to rezone from OI to BN, 1103 East 69th Street. Thank you.
Thank you, Board. Now, looking towards the zoning. As you can see, what is shaded is the site we're looking at, and it is currently zoned OI. And to the north and to the west, it is BN. To the east and to the south, it's all residential single family, RSF 6. OI's purpose in this particular site, in this particular map, as we see here, is to create a reasonable buffer between the active commercial zone to the left and the residential zone to the right, the east. So this is where staff thinks the word intensity is important, as BN is pretty much an extension into the site we're looking at. And the primary concern is the bleeding of people and cars and traffic. That is going to be the bigger concern for us. So what is interesting in this particular case, as we can see in the yellow outline, is this yellow outline is the intended overall comprehensive development for this particular site. So it is going to be attached. It's going to be recombined to the corner lot. And this entire thing is expected to be developed into the restaurant that is being proposed. So as we can see, what is this restaurant that is coming over there? It is Street Spice Restaurant. It has already existed there right across this across waters, right across the site for over, like for nearly a decade and a half now. And the photograph on the right shows you if you're standing on the site where the current Sweet Spice restaurant is. So the concern, however, in this particular case is the traffic. I think as the public already brought it up, as it is quite significant because even the Waters is a collector, 69th and 70th, it's not broad enough to handle the congestion that would come up with a drive-through that is not designed appropriately. And here we have the proposed conceptual site plan. And again, the yellow rectangle is the site we're currently looking at. But the overall development expects a drive-through that enters from 69th and exits at 70th. The proposed site plan drawing shows and labels the stacking length to be 115 feet. Stacking length, for the record, is basically the distance between the entrance for a car to the window of the drive-thru. And it's set, it is labeled to be 115, while the minimum required is 160 feet. So that's like a 45-foot difference, and it's nearly 2 to 3 cars that will be stacking behind additionally. And this might cause significant problem in terms of traffic congestions to the neighborhood. Keeping this in mind, the recommendation in this case of rezoning is staff recommends approval of the request to rezone the subject parcel from OI to BN, subject to the following conditions. One, that is the drive-through component be removed from the development plan, as the proposed stacking length does not meet the minimum required 160 feet, and it is anticipated to create traffic congestion that may negatively affect circulation on the adjacent neighborhood streets as well. Two is that the rezoning be tied to the conceptual site configuration reviewed through the zoning process, because of the elaborate list of uses that does come with BN, and it is quite a it does not have an association, but we have multiple letters that support the restaurant particularly, but we need to keep in mind and be sensitive to all the other uses that might be permitted. Alternatively, if the commission is inclined to support the inclusion of the proposal drive-through, staff recommends consideration of the following. A clearly separated internal circulation system that distinguishes between the drive-through traffic and the vehicles there to just park and for the two retail units that are proposed, as you can see in the conceptual plan. But this separation basically starts right from the entrance and to keep the paths clear and separate to compensate for the two cars. And the incorporation of operational measures such as digital pre-ordering systems and timed queuing to reduce wait times and to alleviate the pressure on the stacking lane during peak hours. But this is an alternative solution if the inclination is towards having the drive-through. Thank you very much. I'm happy to take any questions. And I'd also like to thank all the staff members that helped me through this.
Absolutely. Thanks. And I'd like to hear from the applicant again.
Excuse me. If I need to pull up that site plan. Perfect. Thank you. Bart Smith again, design engineer. My clients, first off, it was an excellent report. I really don't have much to add. I just give you a little history on my clients. 15 years going on at Sweet Spice. Mr. Smith is an Army veteran. They've invested in the community to take the risk to bring this, expand their restaurant. This is a huge investment for them and the city of Savannah. Reading through the letters of support, it's very humbling to see what people have said about the Smiths and their operation. So I think that you're not getting fly-by-night people to invest over there on Waters Avenue. Like I said, the drive-through, we're most likely going to pull that out if we can't maintain our fine 160 feet of stacking. If we can find it, I would like to send this back through the site plan review and get some more comments. We've already done that one time. And if we can't get it, we'll pull it out. It's no use to take the risk of backing up traffic on the Waters Avenue. That would be a disaster. And that's not the intent of this development. So.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's all.
All right, I have speakers here. Kimberly Schaefer.
I'll get back to them.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and the Board. My name is Kimberly Schaefer. I am the subject property owner at 1106 East 70th Street. So I am located to the southeast of the subject property. I do have several objections to this, but in respect for your time, I will keep it very limited. My first concern, obviously, is the impact on traffic flow for our neighborhood. A secondary concern that I have is also overflow parking, as we do have a lot of street parking on 70th Street as it is with the church. Also, you know, with visitors, residents who park on the streets, we are worried about congestion with that as well. As far as congestion on the road goes for drivers, Wendy's is located 0.2 miles away from my home and from the subject property, and it tends to back up onto Waters Avenue at peak hours going southbound. Another issue that we have with it is the drainage area that's shown on the drawing that was listed on the agenda. That property already floods when there are decent rainstorms, and we are concerned about the downstream being on our property. So we would like to know what the applicant plans to do to keep any overflow to a minimum, since there is already flooding on the subject property. Another objection we do have is that our home is on stilts, so we don't have a lot of privacy as it is in the main living areas of our home. So our living room, dining room, kitchen, and our primary bedroom all face this vacant property. So our privacy would be very limited as it is, and even more so with a restaurant, and I see two other retail stores listed on there as well, which we would also like clarification on.
Thank you. And Gregory Schaefer. Please state your name for the record.
Hi, my name is Gregory Schaefer. That was my wife. So most of the objections are probably going to be relatively similar, but mine goes a little bit more in depth as far as access points for the actual restaurant itself, specifically on 69th and 70th. So context matters here as far as traffic flow. So Wednesday, Thursday, and Sunday, we already don't have access to our driveway specifically because of these backups. And based on the exit point specifically on 70th Street, there's maybe two car lengths based on that. So we would basically be blocked in during those time frames or be unable to park our vehicles in that area. So my suggestion would be the access points not be, especially the exit point, not be located on 70th, but potentially go out on Waters. The entrance could be still be going towards 70th, but the problem still remains for that church traffic that comes at Wednesday, Thursday, and Sunday, because that entrance will be relatively similar. So you'll have congestion in those areas, probably similar to, and probably backed out into that Waters area.
Thank you. And I have Richard and Tanya here. Do you want to speak again?
Yes. Can you hear me now?
Yes. Please direct your questions to the commission.
My concern would be that, you know, the traffic flow on our building on the opposite side of the street, it's very difficult for our customers even to get in and out on Waters Avenue during all times of the day. We recommend that they park behind our building in order to be more safe for them exiting and entering off of Water Avenue. And now with a restaurant going here, we think, you know, there's going to be more chances of accidents. Not that there already hasn't been. Front of our building has been hit a couple times already. Mm-hmm. So that's my concern with people flying around, traffic coming through our parking lot to avoid these, you know, people turning into the restaurant.
All right. Thank you. Would the applicant like to rebut?
I would like to address Ms. Schaefer and Mr. Schaefer's questions. With regard to the flooding, I'm assuming you're talking about where we're showing the stormwater pond.
Yeah.
That will be designed in accordance with the city standards for and we would do, if it meets the city standards, I'm not.
Yes, if you'd address the commission.
Yes. So we will design it to city standards and it'll meet all the codes for the stormwater. The exit points that Mr. Schaefer is discussing, those are going to be exit only. There'll be directional traffic through the site. And so I would, without doing a traffic study, but it would be my assumption that most everybody will be taking a right-hand turn and heading back out to Waters. I do not believe that it's going to impact their lot and their parking unless there is y'all are 100% parking on the street. If they're 100% parking on the street, maybe there would be some reduction in the availability of parking to the drive. And the adjacent neighbor on 69th, we have already met with the site plan review and we have the point of tangencies. We already have the drive that we're proposing on 69th Street has got adequate setback from Waters Avenue. So I think that we're meeting the intent of the design guidance.
All right. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Are there any questions for the applicant or for staff at this point? Any comments or discussion? All right, I'll entertain a motion. Oh, I'm sorry.
I guess my concern in all of this is just looking at business infringing on a residential area, which is clearly residential. And how do you keep that from the next guy wanting to do business, convert his house to, you know, some sort of restaurant or retail shop or something? I know we have modified the flume, but changing it to the business neighborhood, is there anything stopping the guy next door? Pardon?
Yeah, I think he has to make application and come before us and make an argument.
So why would we deny him if we approve this?
That's a good question.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Do you want
to? Okay, so this has been somewhat of a discussion. There are, I'll point this out right here because this is actually, this is really the offending portion of this building right here. The conversation that we began to have actually probably would have sent this to you as a site plan, because the thing that makes this problematic is that there's a restaurant proposed here. This is already zoned O&I. This is zoned BC. There's absolutely a use that this user could find where they would recombine these parcels, and you would see a nearly identical site plan come in, ideally without a driveway. And so this discussion began as to whether or not we could keep this to a site plan discussion. Just for the record, I'll also note that these are encroaching into what is supposed to be a setback. So there's still site plan issues, but this is really only because the use here is a restaurant. If this were doctor's offices of some sort, this wouldn't be a discussion. We could recombine these parcels and they could essentially find a way to make this work without having to rezone. So again, you're seeing the driveway and all of these other things simply because petitioner is a restaurant owner and wants to configure the parcel for a restaurant use. But because this is already zoned, it's just a very small step forward. I think Mr. Coles gave the best answer for Ms. Amick's question. That petitioner would have to come in and say, they would have to make the case that there would not be this negative impact to that additional commercial encroachment deeper into the neighborhood. But simply because this is already zoned for O&I use, there are some uses where this wouldn't be a discussion. It would be a site plan conversation rather than rezoning. So
just to kind of add on to that or reiterate, that the parcel that fronts Waters is already BN. So it's essentially the same as what Wendy's is now. So they could put Wendy's there. Mm-hmm. The, like you pointed out, that one small piece of the building that overlaps into the current OI is the issue.
Right.
Any other questions or comments? Go ahead.
About how we feel about the drive-through.
All right.
I don't think it's appropriate.
I agree. Okay. I think there's ways that it could be configured on that site, but not as it's currently laid out on there.
Agreed.
The petitioner did mention that there was a possibility to reconfigure.
And that would come back at the site plan.
If I may, I think that one of the things that you got to remember, and I hate that you are kind of going through this deep dive on the site plan, is that if the zoning is approved, it could be sold tomorrow. So don't spend that much time on this. You know, we made the recommendation that if we move forward, and the only reason that this is referenced is because the applicant submitted it and we saw that it had a drive through and that drive through did not meet the ordinance. So that's why we said no. There's no way based on, configurating, the configuration, it'd be very difficult to meet that standard because they'd have to have 160 feet. So they'd either have to make the building super, super small, which I'm sure that the applicant doesn't want to do, or they can give up the driveway. They're located right across the street from this. They have a very robust walk-in business. They've got pretty quick turnaround. So it's not like you've got a lot of folks staying for hours and hours. But don't get so caught up on this drive-through. Look at it as far as the zoning and the overall use and the fact that all the applicant is making a request to do is to combine it because the bigger portion of this is already zoned business. He's just adding this O&I to provide an additional access point. If this were denied, he could lay this out and just have the access come further back. Would it be the most convenient? No, but he could do it. So I think they're just trying to make it so that it's easy movement from a safe standpoint for the people that happen to go into that parking lot, and it would provide more sight distance, which is always a concern of mine going out through that area. But let's not get too caught up on the site plan of the use because it could be sold tomorrow.
Well, this is a zoning request. And
this is a zoning request, and we have conditioned it to not have a drive-through because it does not meet the requirements.
And we can always ask for the site plan to come back before
and
us.
You can ask for the site plan to come back before you, and if they want to add it at a later time, they can come back and ask that it be added at a later time. But from what I heard from the applicant, I think their number one goal is to get the property rezoned so that they can move forward with their project.
Okay. Questions? Comments?
That was not a card, Madam Chair, comment.
Mr. Mackey, I can't refuse you, can I?
State your name.
You're one of us.
Just go up, Mr. Mackey, if you don't mind stating your name and what this case is, just so that we know for a minute.
And make it brief, please.
Madam Chair, you're the boss, and the board is the boss, so I have to listen to the bosses. But the question is, listen, certain types of communities are to be protected from certain types of commerce. And here you have established residences who just finished talking about the stacking of the traffic. We haven't even gotten into the smell. But the stacking of the traffic, no, it's not like a doctor's office. It's not like a sandwich shop. We're talking about a drive-through where cars stack. And by the car stacking may mean that I can't get into my parking space or I can't get in or out of the parking lot, period.
But I think the drive-through is off the table.
Okay. As long as it is, that makes sense.
All right. Thank you. Okay.
Thank you.
Any other comments? Ready for a motion?
I just have a quick question. Ms. Wilson, if we're going to condition it to where we have the site plan come back before us, how do I phrase that as part of a condition for the motion?
I'm sorry, you could make a recommendation that you approve the staff rezoning with the conditions in addition to having the site plan come back to the NPC for final approval. No. It says that the rezoning is tied to the conceptual configuration, but it does not say that it has to come back to this board. If you want to have it come back to the board, all you do is add condition 3, that the final site plan come back to the NPC for review.
And this isn't the final site plan that we're seeing on here. This is conceptual.
Taken out the drive.
Right. So it just becomes Mr. Coles, it just becomes a third condition that you want it to come back to the NPC
board. I think this second condition, because I'm going to go with the first. So I'm going to make the motion that we approve the rezone to include that the drive-through component be removed from the development plan. So condition 1, and I would like to add the additional condition that the final site plan comes back before this board.
Second.
All right, I have a motion and a second. Mr. Amick?
Yes.
Ms. Bowles?
Yes.
Mr. Coles?
Yes.
Ms. Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Notrika?
Yes.
Mr. Plunk?
Yes.
Mr. Welch?
Yes.
Mr. Wywoody?
Yes.
I too say yes. Motion passes.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. We have before us a map amendment rezone. Whoops, I'm sorry. Master plan amendment, Highlands Boulevard.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the Planning Commission, this is Edward Morrow. This is a request to adopt a new specific master plan for Tract R9 out in the New Hampstead Plan Unit Development. The Highlands Boulevard is, I believe it's actually the address at present for this parcel, but this is actually off of Highgate, not to be confused with Godley Station. So for the record, we are in New Hampstead. The current zoning of the property is PD, consistent with the New Hampstead PD, and the future land use is residential suburban single family. This is development proposed at approximately 4 units per acre. The current specific master plan for this tract was adopted back in 2006 when we had a different New Hampstead master plan. This board, as well as Savannah City Council, have recently adopted a new New Hampstead master plan. And so in accordance with that, the petitioner is requesting to reconfigure the site. And so at present, they're asking for 144 single-family detached home lots with widths that are ranging from 50 to 70 feet, again, with an overall development density at about 4 dwelling units per acre. This is consistent with the newly adopted master plan for this particular tract. On the left-hand side of your screen, you can see down in pod 1, this was the original configuration, which showed the ingress-egress points off of Little Neck Road. Those have been requested to be removed. There's a broader circulation plan that has been adopted and that the city is working toward. There are improvements to Little Neck Road that are underway. And so at present, those are designated to come off of Highgate. And so in speaking with the designer on this project recently, he indicated that there is the one point of ingress egress for these 90, I believe it's 93 or 91 lots that are kind of up here on this portion of the tract, and that at some point there will be additional connectivity for this pod, which I believe might be approximately 50 lots that are down here. Again, there will be additional connectivity related to this point in the future. Just to offer you some site data there, there are designated amenity areas as well as buffering from the wetlands that are present on the parcel, and they have already received their Army Corps permit. With that, MPC staff is recommending approval to adopt this new specific master plan for Tract R9. I'm happy to answer any questions.
All right, thank you. Is the applicant here?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, good afternoon. My name is Chad Zittrauer with Kern & Company, here representing Augusta Land Clearing and Mr. Eddie Faircloth. And, you know, what you have before you tonight is a master plan, this afternoon is a master plan amendment. It should be noted that 53 of the lots are phase one, and that was actually permitted for construction back in 2020. And you can see on the screen where that is constructed, where you see the roadway and the infrastructure. We have passed final inspections, and now we're having to get a master plan amendment, which was an oversight from the city of Savannah and MPC staff previously. So this is kind of a cleanup of something that was addressed back in 2018, 2019, when the master plan was adjusted in order to remove the access points from Little Neck off and back on to Highgate Boulevard. So that's the reason for our request, and be glad to answer any questions you may have. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Any questions for the applicant or staff? Go ahead, Ms. Wilson.
I do. Hi. So can you help me understand the rationale for getting rid of the two access points onto Little Neck Road? What's the rationale behind wanting to get rid of those?
So that was actually dealt with back in 2018-19 when the entire development, in order to expand New Hampshire, or in order to expand Little Neck as part of the widening project, it was modified to bring all the access points from the interior. As part of these individual pods, you know, nobody wants cut through traffic coming through the individual developments. So to the east of this parcel where you see a village, there's another roadway on the eastern side, and that will have connectivity between our development, and Little Neck. It's actually on the, Plan View South on the bottom 53 units. You see a portion of the roadway is paved, and yes, then there's another easement extension that will go out to Little Neck. So there is that 53 units, because there's other development to the south, will have connectivity. But the main portion to the north, the 93 units, will not. And that was part of that previous master plan modification.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
I have concerns about the one way in and one way out. I mean, that never really flies very well with me, because fire departments need access. And if that one street, especially the 93 units, mm-hmm, I do hear what you're saying about they'll connect up to Little Neck in the future. But the northern pod has only one way in and one way out. And I do appreciate that people don't want cut-throughs in their neighborhood, but I also appreciate that we have people coming to us saying the roads are so congested because there's one spine road and everybody feeds into that spine road. If you go over to 278 in Bluffton, you'll see what I'm talking about. And all those cars end up having to go on that one road because it's the only way in and the only way out. And then we have developers in the future who've bought an out parcel and they can't develop that out parcel because the residents are up in arms because they are so caught in that traffic. So this is already a done deal. Is that what I'm understanding? And we're just looking at it now because somebody made a mistake?
53 lots in the phase one is constructed with that one point of access. We do not have room and we are deed restricted from going to Little Neck with a permanent access. I will indicate because of that roadway is within the city of Savannah, we can work with them to provide a gated emergency vehicle access. And what that will allow is keeping all of the primary residences within the main streets, which is the intent of the overall development, and the traffic plan.
We're still funneling all of the traffic to highlight.
Yes, ma'am. And that is the way the original master plan was intended and the way it was previously approved.
Such a great design. Thank you. Go ahead.
Okay. Mike, I'm confused. The top, the northern pod of home sites, the top right where there's a cul-de-sac right next to Little Neck Road. Why can't that go out to Little Neck Road?
Because apparently they have some kind of deed restriction, right?
So it's restricted as far as right away, and this, but with the overall PUD, now we're not talking about this 60 units, but the overall 900 acres, roughly, the overall 900 acre development had an approved transportation plan. And with that approved transportation plan, there was no access to Little Neck other than the designated locations. So that is outside of what my client and our, you know, 70 acres, 144 units can address.
So we, as far as I've seen, we deal with this all the time that now we've seen development over the last 5 years or 10 years, whatever. And everything's different and there's major traffic issues like there is in Pooler. So there should be a mechanism where we can amend what is in place. I'm asking.
Mr. Morrow?
If I could just throw a point out there, it's a proud moment when I can stand here and say, this does not represent a mistake. So every opportunity I get to say that, I will. There were entitlements associated with the approval back in 2006. So the fact that we see infrastructure in lots here is consistent with what was approved previously. This represents a modification. And so that gets to your point. Yes, I would say that this may be a conversation for Mr. Will Bergstner and the general developer of the New Hampstead, leading the Property Owners Association. If there is interest in a modification to that circulation plan, this may be a conversation with them.
Okay, so we could continue this and do that.
We're open to continuing discussions. Obviously, we have an access point that is right there at Little Neck. We would, you know, ideally we have $3 million in infrastructure in the ground right now that we're trying to plat on only 53 units, not the entire 144, but on 53. And so if possible, we would like to move forward with further discussion regarding the secondary access with the master POA, because that is something that is, you know, to a large extent outside of our control of being a minor property owner within the overall development.
Is it this bottom portion here?
It's actually this 53. If you get back to the...
Is that not the 90?
Well, it's 90, but only it's four phases. Phase one, phase two, phase three, and phase four. It's the 53 right here.
I got you.
Okay. The aerial that was on the screen earlier kind of shows the roadway and what is constructed. Right. You can kind of see where the roads are already in place.
Okay. So you're interested in being able to move forward with this particular phase?
Correct. And for the record, on our initial development permit, you know, the city approved and MPC approved. So my client went forward in investing in the infrastructure and moving forward with the understanding,
understood,
you know, all of this understood was addressed. And that's the only reason we're kind of pushing to move forward.
So any more discussion? Any more questions? Do I have a motion?
Okay, can you, well,
I think if you want to make a motion to continue.
I want to make sure we're telling them why we're continuing it, like what we're seeking from them at the next meeting.
We're seeking a pod of more than 93 homes that has two ways in and two
yes.
ways out.
Yes. Because that's not their decision to make, that's the hire.
Madam Chair.
Go ahead.
I don't know that we can compel the
I understand.
Petitioner.
I'm ready to take to whatever measure you pass.
You know, and tie their the answer to another property owner onto the approval of this, and I don't know that that's really our role.
Okay, make a motion.
Cool. Just the motion here. The motion that staff recommendation.
Just motion to approve, right?
Yeah.
Long second.
Yeah. Was that a motion?
I'll make a motion to approve staff recommendations.
Plunk second.
All right. I have a motion and a second. Ms. Amick?
No.
There wasn't any comments from the public. Ms. Bowles?
Yes.
Mr. Coles?
Yes.
Ms. Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Notriga?
Yes.
Mr. Plunk?
Yes.
Mr. Welsh?
Yes.
Mr. Wywoody?
Yes.
I say no. All right, motion passes.
Thank you.
Sucks.
Madam Chair, just a question. That could function through a legislative act. That deed restriction could be removed through a legislative act by the county, mm-hmm. the city, mm-hmm. where that may be. Something
that we can look yeah. toward the future.
Right.
Okay.
The county or city.
Right.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you for the phone.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, no.
Our last item is special use permit, solid waste transfer station in industrial light zoning, 6 Patton Road.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the Planning Commission, Edward Morrow again. Our final petition today is a special use permit to establish a solid waste transfer facility. You can see from the maps on your screen, current zoning in the subject parcels is light industrial, and also this is within an industry light future land use designation. If you are looking, then you can see also the yellow that's indicated on your screen is some residential use. There's also some commercial, I believe it's commercial industrial, commercial suburban use that is adjoining Ogeechee Road here, just to orient you to the kinds of land uses that you would see. And if you are a local and you're headed toward Ogeechee off of 516, this is a site that you'll see over on your right-hand side. I'm told that this used to be the old Sam's Club. So it is now the Planet Fitness that is under construction. If you were to get off and head to your right, and the entrance to actually this would be on Westgate, which is private right of way, would be over to your right. So the only zoning history that this site has that staff was able to locate was a plat that was recorded back in 2007, reviewed rather back in 2007. And there were some annotations that staff thought it was significant for this board to consider. It's my understanding that these were placed by the applicant's father, who was the landowner at the time. It created a new lot and it added a special condition. This is the lot indicated as lot 8, which is actually the subject property where the applicant's requesting to establish the solid waste transfer facility. And the special note states that lot 8 can be used as a storage yard only, with a portable office trailer as the only office allowed. All surface debris must be removed from the site prior to usage as a storage yard. I'll make note that actually this is Westgate, so this is that ingress egress. Off of your screen here, it will be in this general area. The applicant and property owner also maintains a facility that's on this site. So at the time, I'm imagining the property owner would have been thinking of himself being over here off of your screen. And so the use is now expanding here. I will also note there's a special note here due to unsuitable fill. Construction of buildings is not allowed in the hatched area. That was the note that was added to lot 5. We have noted from aerial imagery that there is some clearing of this particular site, and there are some containers that appear to be stored, but there are at present no structures that staff has noted from aerial imagery. The request, again, is to establish a solid waste transfer station, and the ordinance defines that as an intermediate waste facility in which solid waste collected from any source is temporarily deposited to await its transportation to the final disposal site or facility. So this is not a permanent home for solid waste. This is a logistical station where waste is dropped for some short period of time before it is picked up and transferred elsewhere. What you see on your screen are the supplemental use standards that are associated with this. NUZO makes reference to Georgia Department of Environmental Protection standards. You can see the associated state statute number here, 391-3-4, and this details how these uses and their various classifications are regulated by the state. Also, it indicates that this particular use is exclusive of holding hazardous waste, asbestos, biomedical waste, human and animal or biological waste, radioactive waste, sludge, and liquid waste. Again, it is solid waste that is being considered. Per the petitioner, they are requesting to handle municipal solid waste and construction and demolition debris. And just to give you some orientation to how the state regulates these particular uses, this is under a section we call permit by rule for collection, transportation, processing, and disposal. And identified as a transfer station, the state does offer these particular criteria. They'll be the operation will be confined to the interior of a transfer station building, waste not being allowed to scatter outside. Sewage and solids be excluded from the operation. Dust, odor, and similar conditions resulting from transfer operations shall be controlled at all times. Control for rodents and insects, contaminate runoff and wastewater discharged into a wastewater treatment system. Hazardous waste not being contained on the site. And finally, liquid waste restricted from these operations. So the state does take care to go through and enumerate its concerns with these handlings, with the handling of these particular types of materials. I'd also like to share with the board for consideration the siting criteria that the state establishes for these uses. I have taken excerpts. Part D identifies concerns regarding location of these sites in the floodplains. Part E, their location in wetlands. So I guess I'll add, it does not necessarily preclude, but it does recommend certain special handling if you are siting a facility of this nature in any of these environmentally sensitive areas. Finally, there are some additional bits of information that the state does expect in association with siting one of these facilities. I'll point out the distance to the nearest point of public or private drinking water supply, uppermost aquifer gradient, indicating the flow of groundwater, the determination and the demonstration for this information for the site, the absorption and attenuation capacity for land for landfills, the sorbitive characteristics of an of the earthen material, and its ability to absorb contaminants shall be determined. These are pieces of information that the state deemed relevant in siting one of these waste handling transfer facilities. And so these are bits of information that staff thought it prudent to inform the board that if they are being produced for permitting by the state, it may be advisable for this board to also request these materials in its consideration of potentially siting this facility here. To offer you a view of the context of the site, it is within wetlands, and it is also within the 100-year floodplain. You can see the extents of the property. It is largely anticipated to be inundated in a 100-year event. The Applicant has offered this site plan. This is the location of the facility that is planned to be built. It is open on one side and closed with, I believe, some ventilation on the sides, but you can see kind of the contours that would be around. Much of the parcel would remain undeveloped. This is the one portion here with the building and then some of the surrounding grounds that would likely need to be impervious surface. Again, something like 60% of the site would be designated for green space. There would be a pond on the site. Building coverage is anticipated to be at about 23,600 square feet or 3% of the site's total area. So a relatively small structure planned for the site. There were elevations that were included, but I went over to the Atlantic Waste facility so that I could capture a picture just to show you what one of these facilities might actually look like. So this is in Pooler. This is not within the city of Savannah's jurisdiction, but over in Pooler, and it's a comparable facility, I understand. Because of the potential for nuisance, either by floating particulate matter, odors, visual blight, this is a 500-foot radius from the subject parcel. You can see that there are just a few residences, but again, this is largely surrounded by other light industrial land users. These are small, generally small contractor warehouse or other small warehousing operations that are in this area. There's also a rail line that's over here. We can see that significantly more residences are impacted if we stretch this out to a 1,000-foot radius. This, according to a little bit of research, is the area that could generally be expected to experience any odor nuisance that would be associated with this use. Ideally, if there happens to be strong wind gusts. So this is a 1,000-foot radius. Again, these are residences in this area. And so with that, because of the environmentally sensitive context of the site, MPC staff does recommend denial of this request to establish a solid waste transfer facility. However, if the commission is inclined to support the request, we have some recommendations as well as some conditions. The first, and I'll point out, these should probably be considered by this board prior to consideration by City Council. The first would be a general operations plan, and what this would do is provide a clear enumeration of the types of materials to be collected and held, the nature of all containment structures and handling procedures, including the times that those are held, and finally, standard procedures in the event of a leak or other emergency. Second being a general development plan, which would demonstrate inclusion of bio and phytoremediation features to mitigate the impact of any escaping leachate. And what we mean by that is what type of plantings are you able, and I'm going to reference the coastal stormwater supplement, what types of plantings can we get on the site so that we are making every effort to sort of mitigate the potential for any sort of leachate that might go into the soil. And also, just simply because this is a wetland area, how is it that we can add some additional absorptive capacity to the site through vegetation? So we're looking for best management practices from the stormwater manual to the greatest extent practicable. In addition, these are recommendations associated with the request. This board should likely consider, upon the information that you hear today, adding additional performance-based conditions that may be considered to mitigate the concerns related to noise, vibration, particulate matter, dust, and water quality concerns. These should include limitations on operating hours and noise levels or noise events. Stipulation of the manner of containment for various materials that may be regarded as particularly problematic or concerning, mandating muffling and vibration reduction measures, such as specific equipment that may represent industry standard, mandated covering of loads and vehicle washing procedures to ensure that all of that matter is washed into something that does not go into our typical wastewater handling facilities. And finally, ongoing groundwater monitoring. And this is an item that is indicated even in the city's standards for consideration as an ancillary use standard. And so with that, I'm happy to answer any questions you all may have.
Thank you. The applicant's here, isn't
it? Yes, ma'am.
Good afternoon. Ben Summerlin, Mahoney Cole, Corsi & Summerlin, General Counsel for ABC Waste Savannah, Inc., and our property holding company, Westgate Stewart Properties, LLC, which is the actual owner of the parcel in question. My job legally here today is actually pretty easy, because all you have to do is look at page 9 in the staff report. Mr. Morrow has already confirmed that our proposed site plan and our proposed facility meets the requirements under the ordinances for a solid waste transfer station. So I don't have a whole lot of work to do there. The only thing I'm going to do is kind of preface this whole thing. At the end, we're obviously going to ask you to recommend approval. But to hedge our bets, if you're not ready to approve today, we would ask that you would continue this matter to August 5th and present whatever questions, comments, concerns you have. And if I know my client as well as I think I do, you just tell them how high, and then you're going to have to tell them to stop jumping at some point. But I think we're going to do fine. So I think we probably can clear everything up today. So just with that, I'll go ahead and introduce Charles Stewart, our general manager at ABC Waste.
Hello, I'm Charles with ABC Waste. I wanted to take a moment to tell you a little bit about ABC. You know, we're a family-owned company. My grandfather started ABC Waste in 1956. He fought in World War II, then fought in Korea, and they were farmers in Claxton. And they decided, you know what, I'm going to move down to Savannah, because he got the trash bug and he wanted to start a garbage company. And that's what he did. By 1970, he had 20,000 residential customers before the city of Savannah annexed its surrounding areas and grew, bringing our total customers from 20,000 down to a few thousand, at which point he sold his residential division and focused on the commercial and industrial waste. My mother took over ABC in 1998. When she took over in 1998 after teaching special education for 10 years. Sorry, I get choked up a little bit. And bought this property with my father. The reason they bought this property on Patton Road is the area that we're looking to build is a brownfield. It's a former inert landfill. And when we bought this property in 2000, we worked with the city of Savannah and deemed this property as the best location for what we were looking to do for a waste handling facility and recycling. We do a lot more than just trash. And that's one thing we really want everybody to understand. And in 2005, my father got killed in a construction accident, and the development of this property just stopped. We had built the warehouse that ABC resides in and the other two warehouses currently that sit on this parcel, but the current expansion of ABC Waste came to a halt. My mother decided to shrink ABC because it was the only way to keep it alive as a single mother. In 2015, my mother started having health concerns, and I took over. When I took over, I started trying to grow. And I've grown the company by about 5 times its prior size. Since I've taken over, we've expanded from Savannah to Liberty County to South Carolina. And the trash we collect in these outside areas are dumped in those outside areas. And we've expanded into glass recycling, cardboard recycling, paper recycling, plastic recycling. The facility that we're trying to build is very important to southeastern Georgia for the recycling initiatives that we're trying to impose. The city of Savannah tried to start a glass recycling program, and currently it's not operating anymore. We took it upon ourselves about 2 years ago to start our own glass recycling division, where we go around to bars, restaurants, and houses, and we give them totes and trash cans, and we pick up the glass. This facility, we're going to be dumping trash, construction debris, and recyclables in, and then transloading them in semi-trucks and shipping it off to either an end buyer or a final landfill. With the approval of this, let's see. You know, I have a speech that I'm trying to read here. It's hard for me to, you know, read it, to be honest with you. It's been a hard 10 years, you know, growing the company to the size it's been. We've been great stewards of Savannah. We're the oldest garbage company in the area. We've been in business for 70 years now. In January, we'll have our 70th year anniversary. We believe that this facility is not going to affect our neighbors. I understand Mr. Morrow put up a picture of a 1,000-foot area around us. If you were to look at the facility that we are building, and then 1,000 feet from that facility, that radius is significantly smaller. I believe the radius that Mr. Morrow used is from the property lines, not from the actual facility that we are building. I would urge the board to grant us this permit to help increase the recycling and waste handling infrastructure in Savannah. And I don't think that y'all will regret it. The residents want recycling. They want more abilities to be green and protect our environment. I'm an avid hunter and avid fisher. You know, we've started a nonprofit fishing tournament we do and partner with the Shriners every year in order to promote outdoors and the environment. When you throw away a piece of glass, that's something that could be immediately made into a new bottle. When you throw away a piece of cardboard, that's something that I would turn into a new box. When you throw away a piece of paper, that's something that I would make into a new piece of paper. We've even recently, since we don't have this facility permitted yet, we've even started a new shingle recycling initiative with Owens Corning. So all the shingles that are produced during their manufacturing process, we partnered with somebody else and we ship those out, and they're shredded and then made into new materials that can then be sold. Garbage isn't anything that anybody wants, and I understand y'all are concerned voting for this, and the residents have a bad taste in their mouth, as they should. Anything garbage-related is bad, but this here is not. This facility is going to be essentially a pavilion with three walls, and our trucks are going to come in and dump. Now, solid waste, by our permit and by our operations, cannot be in the facility overnight. By the end of operations, it has to be out of the facility. Currently, there's a facility on Dean Forest Road that is within 500 feet of the Parker's gas station. Now, I go there and I kill their liver and gizzards every week. My doctor tells me not to. But when I go there, I have never smelled an odor. I sent my lawyer and my engineer over there, and they didn't detect any odors either. This facility is a big deal for the recycling infrastructure in our area. The permit we need may say trash, but we do so much more than that. About 2 weeks ago, we started, you know, trying to prepare for this meeting, you know, probably a little late. And we reached out to everybody we could think of to try and get support. We knocked on our neighbors' doors. We have five neighbors that our lawyer has passed around to you that have issued letters of support. We have environmental nonprofit agencies that normally would be opposed to this, but they know what we do and they want it passed. And we've reached out to politicians and other individuals who are trying to move forward the recycling and waste infrastructure in our area, and they have given letters of support as well. I'm going to take a moment for my engineer to step up here. I believe he can answer any questions you have, probably a little better than I can. With that.
Thank you. Are there any questions for staff or the engineer? Go ahead.
I'm Jay Maupin, Maupin Engineering. We're the engineer on the project. I hate to follow up a speech like that, but I wanted to address a few of the technical aspects of it that in the staff report that I think are a little misleading in the overall scope of the project. First of all, the project is not in the wetlands. It's adjacent to the wetlands, but all of Chatham County is adjacent to wetlands. We're not impacting any wetlands as part of this project. So just to be clear on that, there are no wetlands involved. And actually, as Charles mentioned, the project had been an inert landfill once upon a time, and the wetlands are the volunteer growth that's been there since his father is on the property. But they are technically wetlands at this point, but they are not native or virgin wetlands at all. Also, in regards to that, the note that was on the plat was actually put there by the owners, by the current owners, and could be removed very easily. It should be noted also that transfer station is part of the new zoning ordinance and was not a defined use at the time that that note was put on the plat. And this is a very similar use that that note is meant to not put a building that confines gases and things within a building, but will ventilate anything coming up from the soil. Thirdly, Charles alluded to this also in his speech, the exhibit that Edward put up also was from the property line as far as the 1,000-foot radius. This building, as he noted also, is only 3% of the total parcel. It's a very small portion. We're 500 foot away from the property line. So the 500 foot exhibit is actually where the 1,000 foot line is from the building itself. And also he mentioned in reference to the flood zone. Again, this property, this building will be built up above to meet the current flood zone requirements. You're not going to have trash floating around in some potential flood. It's going to be above the 100-year flood elevation. All of the activity takes place inside the building, under roof, where the rain can't get to it, and it's enclosed basically on three sides where you're not going to have trash flying around in wind or anything of that nature. And actually, the wetlands actually is a benefit to our project because it does provide that natural buffer all the way around. It makes it a fairly remote site and also provides a wind break and vegetative visual break to the surrounding property owners. The last point I wanted to make is with this facility, we've had some comments from the public, letters that talk about rotting trash and piles that'll be here for days and nights. And that's not the case. You know, the purpose of this facility is to streamline their business and keep things moving quickly. So the trash on this site is only going to stay here potentially a maximum of several hours at most. The EPD requirements that Edward referenced in the report also noted that everything's to take place inside and everything is to be cleaned up every night. So nothing stays on the site overnight. Nothing stays here for long periods of time. And that's really to our benefit because that streamlines the business and accomplishes what the facility is really for. It's not a landfill. It's not a place where trash stays. Thank you.
Thank you. The questions for staff or for the applicant?
I do have some questions.
All right, go ahead, Ms. Bolf.
What are the proposed operating hours?
Our proposed operating hours would be from 6 a.m. to 5 p.m.
Any current or previous violations?
No, ma'am.
What percentage of your business is recycling?
Probably about 35%. Yes, ma'am.
Other questions? All right, I do have several.
Not one more.
Sorry.
You say that it'll be removed before the day is out?
Yes, so.
Where does that go? I mean, they dump it at your site and you're dumping it somewhere else?
Yes, sir. So the trash would be hauled to a EPD approved landfill and the recycling would be sent to an end user.
That landfill here local?
Some of the waste will go to a local landfill. Some of the waste will not. They have different classifications of landfills. They have Subtitle D and C&D landfills. A C&D landfill is specifically designed to handle the more inert waste, and we try to send our C&D to a C&D landfill because it's more apt to handle it than a Subtitle D.
If it's here local, why wouldn't they just take it there to begin with?
Well, the C&D wouldn't be going local.
What is local?
It would be going to McIntosh County, Evans County, Jenkins County. It would be going outside of the county. It would not be going to a location that we are able to truck to feasibly. If we direct haul to it, we'd be out of business.
Thank you.
Any other questions? All right, we do have several speakers. Mr. Mackey, we get to hear from you a third time.
Yes, ma'am. I didn't know this was on the petition, but I thought it was interesting.
So I stayed. Thank you. Very first thing I want to say, Mr. Maupin is one heck of a engineer. He's the best. With no disrespect, no indifference to you. I respect him highly. First thing I'd like to say, there was mention of a 1,000-foot, and again, Madam Chairman, thank you. Mm-hmm. To the board, thank you. Thank y'all. Thank y'all. Thank y'all. There was a 1,000-foot radius that was stated that was to the nearest community. And I may ask, Madam Chair, what is that community?
Mr. Morrow?
What's the name of that community?
Probably.
Sorry, bear with me one second.
Sorry.
Can I just ask you to refine your question also, that was 1,000 feet from the border of the property or the 1,000 feet from the proposed location of the transfer station?
It was from the edge of the property.
Okay. So Tremont Park is a very well-known, habitated, historic community. Then I saw up on the screen as some of the, let me move along faster, Madam Chair, I'm sorry. Some of the information was moving on the screen. It mentioned that there were several types of potential types of trash that could come to the facility. Is it possible that they can narrow down exactly, are we talking about chemical waste? Are we talking about nuclear waste? Are we talking about what type of waste are we talking about?
We can definitely.
Honestly, what type, and I'm just saying, can they honestly say what type of waste? And I preface that by saying, some years ago, there was a gentleman, his name was Donald Hackney. He came to Savannah and he tried to open up a medical waste incinerator in the back of Carver Village. And the community fought that very, very, very strongly. And after which the county commissioned created a medical waste task force, which I was on that task force. And this was back in 87, 88. But nonetheless, what I learned was very, very interesting. Still applicable today. I'm just kind of worried about what type of garbage or what type of generational trash would come to the landfill.
We've got 30 seconds.
You did? I got you, Madam Chair. I will not bother you. I bet you I won't. Okay, and then I think the engineer said that there was not any problem with the wetlands, but there was some situation and some discussion about the distance of anything in the air. It's air transmitted. But I'd like, Madam Chair, that question asked about what exactly, specifically, what type of waste will they be bringing to the facility?
All right. Thank you. Richard Law.
President of the community.
We can do her first if you'd rather.
No, I'm good. I'm the president of Ogeechiton and Dawes Avenue community. And one of the things is
your name, please, for the record.
Richard Law Senior.
Thank you.
One of the things was I'm gonna give up. An article that came before the MPC 2019, 90, and 95. This was the article. What happened is they allowed industrial park to be built up. The city approved it, and they washed Dawes Avenue out of that community. And now we're still trying to work on that now. But what I'm saying is you think before you act. That's what I'm saying. They turned around and they put Clock Block right next to Ogeechiton. And all of those fumes coming, and what I'm telling you, I took my mother. What I'm saying is my daddy built this house, and my mama was pregnant with me. That's 1951. And what I'm saying is I take my mother to Dr. Porter with this breathing stuff. She died several years ago. But what I'm saying is, you putting all of this in these neighborhoods like this, it don't make sense. Don't make common sense. The taking, I want to see you put this stuff on the island, where they're trying to put out there. But what I'm saying is, we need to think before we I can do all of these things like this here. I mean, Clock Block is destroying Tremont Park, Ogeechiton, Cloverdale, and Carver Village. It's coming out of all of that stuff. And nobody just sitting, don't do nothing. We just keep
20 seconds left.
Keep complaining about it, and nobody doing anything about it. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Mark Coe.
Good afternoon. My name is Mark Coe. I'm the branch manager for W.W. Williams, located at 14 Westgate. I represent the company W.W. Williams here locally, and it's approximately 32 full-time employees. At 14 Westgate, we're the closest neighbor to the proposed waste transfer station. and we are strongly opposed to this special use permit. The proposed site would directly adjoin our facility, literally in our backyard. I also manage and operate a satellite location across the street at 15 Westgate Boulevard. At that facility, we're 7 months into a 5-year lease, so we're going to be there for a while. Currently, W.W. Williams has operated there for over 40 years at 14 Westgate Boulevard, and I'll briefly enumerate our concerns. First, of course, is the horrendous smell that waste stations generate. You heard today waste described as something that comes in and goes out, and I heard everything, but it smells like a rose, and I think anybody that's ever taken out their trash knows better. If the permit is granted, we'll be forced to endure the smell of rotting garbage 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, every week, with no reprieve ever. Second concern we have is customer retention. We run the risk of losing both new customers and long-term customers. We've been in business at this location, as I said, for over 40 years, and it's possible we could lose customers because who wants to do business next door to a garbage dump? Third is employee retention. We're at risk of losing employees over this. Would anyone want to work next door to a garbage dump if they have a choice to work somewhere else? I employ skilled labor, and skilled labor is hard to come by. Each one of my technicians generates on average $15,000 a month in gross revenue. I have somewhere on the order of 15 of those techs employed currently, both working on site and mobile. I also have a lot of support staff, parts personnel, and warehouse personnel to support those technicians. In addition, pests and predators, garbage dumps tend to attract rats, possums, raccoons, roaches, maggots, and all other manner of vermin. These pests also attract the predators that feed on them, be they stray cats and dogs, foxes, coyote, carrion fowl. It's not a pretty picture. Finally, our concern is the fire hazard because the proposed site would directly adjoin ours. Any risk of fire could easily put our property at serious risk and that of our personnel.
Sorry, you're out of time.
Understood. We would respectfully request the Planning Commission to deny the special use permit.
Thank you. All right. Beatrice Williams.
I'm Beatrice Williams, and I'm president of the Tremont Park community. That was established in 1912. We are a proud community, and we love our community, we love our neighbors, and we want to be safe in our community. And we don't want our community to be forgotten. Our concerns, a transportation station for hazard waste and recyclable material be allowed in our area, our neighborhood of Tremont Park, is unacceptable and most of all, not desired or wanted. The project description, and I quote, the proposed facility known as Transfer Station ABC Waste will be used for the temporary transfer consolidation, sorting, and short-term storage of waste. The operation is intended to enhance, in other words, to increase or make greater as in value. Enhance transportation efficiency by enabling their aid again to supply with the means, opportunity to be or do something. Enabling trucks to offload waste material locally in our community, then returning to more distant long-term storage sites, allowing for shorter and more frequent hauls. To me, This request is more concerned with their gain and convenience than the safety and health of the surrounding communities and other businesses as well. I quote, the proposed development will build a concrete building designed with a specially sealed floor to prevent leakage of hazardous, horrible waste material. And why should a building be needed for short-term use? Short-term use, that's questionable to me. How long is short-term? The Tremont Park area is in a flood zone, AE, that is shown on infrastructure map. Tremont Park is zoned as residential. However, areas around this community is zoned as light industrial, which allows businesses to be in our community is a problem.
Thank you. I'm sorry.
My time is up.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no. Oh. Okay.
Sorry. There are a couple more. If anyone would like to yield their time to Ms. Williams. Okay. Ms. Williams. Oh, I think she was Katie Johnson. Katie Johnson?
Yes, Katie Johnson, okay. Yield her time to me.
Thank you.
And as Mr. Law mentioned, Global Logistics, the U-Haul business, and Clark's Blocks are in our area, and they all pollute the area. And now, to add to the problem, a hazardous waste, that would be an insult to this community to approve this request. And by the way, we're still waiting on those letters. We have not received a letter of anything about this. If this is required, it will be an unwanted anxiety and unwelcome business imposed on our community. I would ask the committee, the committee, if this was a request for your community, how would you feel? Would you think it's okay? Or would you feel that this is good to bring to my area to impose on my family? The residents of Tremont Park and area committee share a rich sense of heritage and home ownership like other respectfully communities. We deserve the same respect in our community that's been established since 1912. We ask and the request be denied for the good of Tremont Park and the surrounding community and businesses. I did not make up anything I quoted or said. It's all here in writing. Okay. We're asking the request be denied and this business seek for a more an appropriate area to perform. Respectfully, Tremont Park residents. God bless.
Thanks so much. Mike Vasquez.
Yes, Madam Chairman, thank you very much. My name is Mike Vacwer, and I am here representing businesses that have operations in Westgate Industrial Park along Westgate Boulevard. This is something like coming home for me. 47 years ago, I was the public information officer for the Metropolitan Planning Commission, and I have seen literally thousands and thousands of these meetings. But this is only, I think, my third time appearing before the MPC. I want to thank Mr. Coe and Ms. Williams for their comments. And needless to say, you have received a letter from me. On behalf of my clients, I am here to request that you approve the staff's recommendation for denial of this. You have a brief petition before you which lists the companies and owners that I'm representing. And we have three particular issues that we're concerned with. Traffic, which has not been mentioned. That is a very difficult place to get in and out of. I would invite any of you to come out there in the morning or in the afternoon and try to get out onto Highway 17 without turning right, generally the opposite direction that you want to go in. This will just increase traffic that is already beyond the numbers that is acceptable. Fire hazards. The handling of solid waste creates fires. I know that you've noticed a number of fires that are in landfills recently. Excuse me. One of the biggest items that ignites are lithium batteries. Lithium batteries are contained in household garbage. There is no way to remove those unless you operate what's called a dirty MRF, which is basically a municipal recycling facility that removes recyclables and hazardous materials from the trash. But the overriding and the largest issue that we have is what Mr. Coe and Ms. Williams referred to, and that is smell. And I want to pick up on what Mr. Mackey said with the previous item talking about smell, but it was smell from a restaurant activity that makes your mouth water. This is not smell. This is downright odor. Fully packed Packer trucks are going to be coming into this facility to unload and to transfer this garbage to other locations. We contend that this creates a nuisance, which is not allowed within the ordinance. We concur fully with the findings and recommendations of the MPC staff and ask for you to approve the denial of this application by APC Waste. And I'll be glad to answer any questions anybody has.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Did you have a question? Go ahead.
Just, Mr. Vacker, just with all of these petitions that we've seen before this board before, I would just appreciate a petition that's actually signed by these folks, because anyone could make this list without a signature to it. It's hard to, you know.
I fully understand that. Most of these are the owners that are remote. And in answering that question, let me reference something that Ms. Williams said. Letters were sent to the property owners in Westgate Industrial Park. All of those property owners are absentee landlords in the Northeast and other places in the U.S. So it's very difficult, but if you would like to see those, I can certainly get them for you.
I appreciate that. And I understand, unfortunately, our requirements for notice don't go further than.
I understand. I just wanted to point that out.
No, I understand.
As to why some folks did not receive notices.
Right.
Thank you.
Ms. Stewart, would you like to?
Yes, ma'am.
Come forward and state your name for the record, please.
My name is Carolyn Hodges Stewart. My father was the one who started the garbage company in 1956. Back then, it was called Superior Sanitation, and we sold it to Burt Walls, Atlantic Waste, and got him in business. Lo and behold, if we could go back in time, right? I just want you to know that my son has done an incredible job. He is carrying out my dream and my husband's dream. We are very big into recycling. We are not into a garbage landfill that keeps being surfacing up at this place. It is a transfer station. My son has purchased, trust me, $300,000 in equipment just for recycling in the last 2 months of this year. He's established 10 businesses in recycling. They have started a program. We are handling that program now. He's done an incredible job with it. They love working with him. If the transfer station had a big smell, do you think Mr. Parker would put his property adjacent to Atlantic Waste and have raccoons and all this stuff coming on his property where people are buying food? No. There's semi trucks there that park there and sleep there overnight. the smell is not an issue, especially at a transfer station, especially that is heavily into recycling. That is our main focus, is recycling. Our goal is to have zero waste in 10 years or less. In order to receive that goal in our industry, we have to recycle. If we don't recycle, we will never receive that goal. We want to get the most out of our landfills. And in order to do that, we have to recycle. And I have health, I've had health concerns. I see Dr. Porter every month. I get a call in for them because of my lungs. I am not going to let a transfer station have contaminations on my property because I own it and I can control it.
30 seconds left, please.
The transfer station, we are going to do glass, cardboard, timber, plastic, anything that we can recycle, that is what we're going to do. We would love to, we would lose our license if we brought hazardous material at our property. We cannot do that. We are here for the community, and I have been here my whole life, and that is what I want to see us strive to be the best customer and business that this city has ever had.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I have two online folks. Dylan Ward. Say your name on the record, please.
Yes, my name is Dylan Ward. I am calling in on behalf of the property ownership of 14 Westgate Boulevard. Our tenant there is W.W. Williams. So I just wanted to call and say I am in support of Mark Coe and Mike Vacker's conclusions on the trouble that a trash facility like this would bring. We do not find that it is, it adds value to the industrial park. Anybody knows if you drive behind a trash truck, it has an odor. It is no, there's nothing to maskable about that. Certainly if there's going to be dozens of trucks driving, coming and going daily, that will just present an optical and, you know, noticeable detriment to our tenant who operates faithfully at that building and to their customers. So we would support the MPC staff's recommendation of denial, wholeheartedly. And I think that's it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I also have Bishop Charles Williams online. If you would please state your name for the record.
I yield my time.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I yield my time to Mr. Mackey.
Mr. Mackey, would you like to share again?
Yes, I just want a couple of seconds.
The noise, the smell, the ability to be able to expedite a truck with waste down Highway 17 now, that's in the beginning of a development phase that will not be finished perhaps until 2026, 2027. The issue of bringing trash down Stiles Avenue, the issue of bringing trash down the 516 side of US 17, and then turning into the cut that's going to take you ultimately to where they're going to be housed, that's passing all of the businesses that Mr. Vacker is speaking of. Now, we're talking garbage. And again, Madam Chair, I just ask specifically, what type of waste are we talking about? Because on that, on this board, it did mention something about medical waste. It did mention radioactive waste, not saying that that's what they would carry, but we need to answer to that question. And lastly, I know that the statutes and the rules say that by footage, they are to require to meet with certain individuals, but how is it that these companies with this type of institutional want and desire can come into the neighborhoods, but yet they are not compelled to talk to the neighbors? I don't get it. I really don't get it. And these neighbors in these historic neighborhoods, in which they mentioned Cloverdale. I live in Cloverdale. I just happened to be here and saw that it was on there. They knew. But my point is, no one said anything to us. Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Mackey. Would the applicant like to...
Sorry, I just want to pull up the ordinance to demonstrate what the actual public notice requirement is for this. A special use permit does not require a neighborhood meeting. A special use permit request does not require a neighborhood meeting.
It should.
Application.
Sure. For the record, the commissioners are saying boo to that, that you don't have to reach out to the community. I thought it was because Westgate was a certain distance within Westgate that it didn't expand to the Tremont Park community. But if you're saying there's no requirement, that's different.
Okay. I'm sorry. I have it up on the screen right here. Special use permit, a neighborhood meeting is not required. However, I would like to add that we, in our initial meetings with the applicant, did indicate to them that they should reach out. I brought up the map, and I did not even recall myself, but I was reminded that we gave them the name of Tremont Park. Staff always makes an effort to tell petitioners whether or not it's required that they should confer with neighborhoods about any of their concerns. I'm also kind of drawing a blank on this one. There have been some recent ones where, it was the drive-through. It was that petition where there was no active neighborhood association. So I made this comment in city council. Even if there is a neighborhood designation and it's a rezoning, whatever the case may be, and it's required, if there's no active neighborhood association, there's no direct link for the person to reach out to. On Open Neighborhoods, it will list an email address, a name, a phone number. If there's no point of contact.
Understood. Really, can we get the applicant up here to rebut?
Yes, ma'am. I want to reiterate what Edward said, that we actually did do what was required by the ordinance, but then we went above and beyond. We reached out to the surrounding neighborhood associations of who's on record with the MPC, with the Tremont and Ogeechiton and a couple other neighborhoods. We only heard back from Gladys Jones, who was and we had some email conversation with her, but none of the neighborhood associations actually deemed, because we were inside the industrial park, that they wanted to have us as part of their meetings. We actually did act were on the agenda previously, and we pulled our, or we asked for a postponement so that we could have time to meet with Mr. Vakwer, because we just found his letter of opposition, and there were a couple others that we went and knocked on their doors that were in opposition after the previous agenda that we were on. So we've made an effort, and I'd be happy to talk with Mr. Mackey and the other members here. But perhaps that information needs to get updated that's in the system of who we need to be contacting.
Understood. Would you be willing to meet with the neighborhood associations?
Yes, ma'am. We would be willing to meet with the neighborhood associations.
All right. Go ahead, Ms. Bowles.
Would you be able to tell us how many trucks per hour you anticipate coming through your site?
We would anticipate roughly 3 to 4 trucks per hour.
Mr. Wywoody, did you have a comment?
Where are other facilities similar to this one located currently in Savannah, Chatham County?
There's currently one on Louisville Road, and the one on Louisville Road is very close to the neighborhood on the other side of the railroad tracks. And there is a transfer station, which Mr. Morrow used as an example on Dean Forest, which immediately neighbors Parkers.
Okay, and how would this differ from, let's say, Bacon Park transfer station? I know that's consumer-oriented for the residents, but this is...
It would be very similar. The only difference is that instead of putting the trash inside of a roll-off to then be hauled off later that week, it would be put inside of a pavilion, which would then be loaded and hauled off within the next couple of hours.
Okay. And it seems as though when dry trash is kind of a broad description, and it would be easier to say what is not part of the trash content. Is it a short list of what is not a part of the, which list is longer? What is not a part of the trash content or which is?
Well, it's a short order list nonetheless. We cannot accept any medical waste. We cannot accept any nuclear waste, any hazardous waste, any liquid waste, any human or biological waste. We can only accept household trash, construction debris, which is inert, such as wood, cardboard, sheetrock, and then recyclables.
What about yard trash, things like that? Yard trash?
Waste? Yeah, yard waste counts as C&D, yes, sir.
Okay.
Go ahead, Mr. Welsh.
Yes, my concern also, you had mentioned earlier, correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought you said earlier in your presentation, asbestos.
No, sir.
No.
We cannot accept asbestos. Mr. Morrow put up on his presentation a list of things in a red box that we are not able to accept.
Okay.
Somewhere along the way, it got misconstrued, and somebody thought that was a list of permitted items. That is a list of no-go items.
Is your vision to grow?
Yes, sir.
Expand?
Our vision is to expand into more.
The vision of this country is to go electric.
Yes, sir.
In all industry, which I'm in. And the thing that concerns me, where are these batteries going to go? Where are they going to be dumped, and who's going to haul them? Because that is very, very hazardous.
Yeah, so we actually work with a company out of Florida. When our customers have batteries, lithium batteries, forklift batteries, there's a lot of batteries used to power heavy equipment. You know, there's the company in Florida. They have special packaging that they put these batteries in, and they ship them out, and those batteries are broken down and recycled.
So you're already doing batteries?
We don't. We recommend our customers to send those batteries there. Batteries are not accepted as a waste item.
And you will not accept electric batteries?
No. Any resident who puts batteries in your waste stream is doing it illegally. If you put your AA lithium batteries in the trash can, you're doing it illegally. Now, I can do my best to control it, but it is not accepted, and we do not allow it. And if we find out you do it, then either we fine you or we stop servicing you.
Go ahead.
What portion of the waste that you expect on this site is going to be like food waste, anything that would generate smell?
It would be about 20%.
How can you control the smell?
The smell can be controlled through a few different methods. One method is to prioritize the handling of that waste. So as soon as it is dumped, that material will realistically be on site for 45 minutes to an hour. The construction debris and the recycling, those are classified as inert. So we'll have different bays in this facility. And those inert items that do not pose any odor or, you know, concerns will be taken as, will be handled secondly. And, you know, MSW will be handled first and shipped out.
Ms. Wilson.
Is Mr. Morrow in where we can have, the list of what's not going to be accepted pulled back up on the screen? He snuck out.
Yeah. He had to take an emergency phone call. But we can pull that back up.
Okay. And while that's being pulled back up, so I think there is some confusion, or maybe not 100% clear on what a transfer station is versus a landfill. And so I have extensive experience in the landfill. Business. This transfer station, which will not be allowed to accept asbestos, hazardous material,
can we jump into that?
It was actually a couple of
you read that.
Okay.
Prohibited materials at the bottom in that red box.
Okay, so this transfer station, will not be allowed to include hazardous waste, asbestos waste, biomedical waste, human and animal biological waste, radioactive waste, sludge, and other liquid waste. And also just by what is legal to put in your household trash, you can't put paint, you can't put batteries, you can't put fertilizers, you can't put household cleaning products. So if you are doing that, you are violating our city laws and the EPD laws. So this transfer station, if I'm understanding it correctly, is basically a holding for the day of trash, of waste that comes in, and the tipping floor will be cleaned and everything will be removed off of the tipping floor every night.
So C&D in recycling, the inert materials, those can stay inside the facility, outside the cover, or outside of the weather overnight. Anything such as MSW, which is solid waste, household trash, the stuff that could potentially smell, that stuff has to be out of the facility before close of business that day. So by 5 p.m., all the MSW will have to be out of the building. Secondly, by 5 p.m., any C&D or recyclables must be inside the building. And we have to keep some. You know, when it comes to glass, currently, we've been running a pilot program for about 2 years. Honestly, I'm proud. You know, we have gotten, you know, the Starlin Yard. We have gotten the Hyatt. We have gotten the Marriott. We have gotten Savannah B. You know, all of these companies have started recycling their glass. And our glass recycling program right now is a pilot. If this gets denied, then that recycling program for the city and its residents will end.
So the glass, when everything is brought to the transfer station, the recyclables, like the glass, is taken from outside of the pavilion and stored outside?
So glass will be stored inside of the pavilion. Due to the DNR rules and regulations, it can be outside of the pavilion. But due to the design of our facility, we have enough bays to accommodate it being inside. And the reason we have to store some overnight, we don't pick up enough glass in order to ship it. If I picked up enough glass in a garbage truck to ship it all the way to the end buyer 5, 6, 7 hours away, then I would never dump it out of the garbage truck into a semi truck. I'd just ship it straight there. But we're only picking up, you know, less than 10 tons a day. A semi truck holds roughly 28 tons.
Okay, tell me what will stay in the pavilion for longer than a 24-hour period. We got the glass.
Yeah, cardboard, paper, wood, like metal that's mixed in with the construction debris. There'll be little bits of dirt and concrete mixed in with the construction debris.
So sheetrock and construction.
C&D is construction and demolition debris. That's what the DNR classifies as, you know, the inert material that can stay in that facility overnight.
And now
there are two facilities currently in the area that are owned by large corporations outside of Savannah. One is on Lewisville Road, one's on Highway 17. Those facilities store all of their CND outside of their, they don't have a building. They store it outside on the ground and it rains on it. And all of that leachate. So leachate is when trash mixes with water. All that leachate goes off into the surrounding areas. Our facility will be the only facility, you know, that does not have that. So by permitting our facility, it will actually clean up our area by eliminating these dinosaurs of operations who, frankly, have just been acquired by large conglomerates and are operating under these grandfather policies with significantly less stringent rules and regulations than what we will be abiding by.
Would you be willing to exclude gypsum and sheetrock from what you're allowed to take in?
It wouldn't be possible because when we go to a construction site,
yeah,
I mean, they're going to be putting sheetrock in with that roll-off container.
So I know that during the day, the odor, you know, because the barometric pressure changes and, you know, when the cooler air at night and the barometric pressure changes, that's when you get the problems with the odor and the odor rolling. Would there be a way to either have a door that closes at night or some type of misting system to?
We could install a misting system, but we would not be able to put a door. So when my father and my mother bought this property, so we bought this property in 2000 with the help of the city of Savannah. The city of Savannah at that time said, we want more recycling and we really wanted to do it. We had bought a tire shredder and we were actually doing a lot more recycling initiatives than we're currently doing. We're trying to get back to that stage. And the city of Savannah said, this property is the best property that you can use for what you want to do. And the guy that owned it, he made a borrow pit where he dug all the sand and dirt and sold it. And then he backfilled it with dry trash, which is carpet. You know, muck, which is just wet dirt, and yard waste. And the city of Savannah, we've done the studies on the property and the property is ideal for what we're doing. But due to the conditions of the prior use of this property, we cannot put a door. But that's why it's so good for what we're doing. I mean, if we don't use it for what we want to use it for, nobody else is going to be able to use it. It's going to be a blight on the city of Savannah for many years to come. You know, that intersection of 516 and Highway 17 has got a lot going for it. And there's a little bit of traffic, but we really don't have any problems. And I say that with honesty. You know, the policy that we have within our company is during rush hours, we require all of our trucks, and we do this currently, we require all of our trucks to make right-hand turns on the Highway 17. We do not let any of our trucks make left-hand turns during rush hour. It is not safe. You know, I'm sure everybody's heard those myths where the post service only turns right. Steering wheels don't turn left. You know, and that's the same thing for this. If we're going to sit there for 2 minutes waiting for a left-hand turn, it's quicker just to make that right. And that's what we're going to do. You know, we really plan on operating as a benefit to the surrounding community. This will not be a detriment. Secondly, if you look at the letters of support that we submitted, there is one individual on that letter of support who is listed by as being an opponent on some of the other letters that y'all have received. The garbage industry is a nasty business. When I'm applying for bids, when I'm trying to make new recycling initiatives, our competitors hire lawyers. They hire lobbyists to go against us. Every ton that we recycle is one less ton that goes into their landfill. And I think if you look at that list, you'll see a little bit of incongruencies. And I respect all of y'all's opinion. I respect all the neighbors to want to enjoy being able to sit on their front porch. And that's not going to change. You know, like I said, if it changed, Parker's wouldn't have put his facility right next to one that is. So the Atlantic Waste facility on Dean Forest Road, they handle a couple of thousand of tons a day, couple of thousand. And Parker's are willing to be next to them. Our facility is going to handle 200 tons, we hope to grow it. You know, I would love in 5 years for this facility to handle 500 tons a day. But by no means can I afford to even go out and buy that many daggum trucks in order to handle thousands of tons a day. And if there's a facility that handles thousands of tons a day within 200 feet of a Parker's gas station, and there was an odor issue, I guarantee you everybody in this room would have heard about it, especially with our project on y'all's agenda. It would have come up, on y'all's radar.
Thank you. Other questions? Go ahead, Mr. Cole.
Just discussion. I think that, there are obviously concerns from the community that need to be addressed. And I feel like some of the community got to hear those today, but I do think that we should continue this and that an actual neighborhood meeting happen. Because I think, from what I've heard from you and your engineer, it makes sense to me, and it doesn't seem like it's going to have the kind of impact that a lot of perception may have it at. So I think that you don't have a problem with the business itself. You have a problem with your marketing or communication of it. So as we kind of discussed in a prior petition, I think it's important that you go to the community before you get here.
And we did. We emailed them.
But specifically,
but you have community representatives here today that you can
specifically
talk with
Tremont
before
Park.
You leave.
Yes.
Tremont Park across 516 from you. It's fine to have the business side, but you need to go to the residences too.
Yeah. And we wish we could have talked to them earlier. But we did everything we could to reach out to them.
Are we having discussion?
Yes. At this point, this is board discussion, I believe.
Are we done talking to him?
I think we probably are. Yes, thank you.
I can recall when I bought one of the first pieces of property in Southbridge on Hickory Grove Lane, an odor. I should have walked 300 feet or however far it was when there was a 25-foot berm and crawled over the hill and saw City of Savannah dump, and I sold my house. Because I wasn't going to tolerate that. And I don't care how far Parker's is. We're not talking about Parker's. We're not talking about Dean Forest Road. That's all commercial. If you don't think you can't smell Atlantic waste, you can. I know
there,
that.
There is a difference between a dump and a transfer station,
I know.
Though.
Yeah, but you're still talking about
right.
Bringing in waste, trash from your home, garbage.
But it doesn't
20%
sit there
of it.
Past close of day at 5 o'clock.
I understand.
As opposed to a landfill where it stays there forever until it breaks down.
Well, I understand. And we took a tour. Mr. Mack, you'll remember this. The commissioners at that time, I'm old school up here, but we took a tour of the city dump where they were turning that trash into natural gas. And it was quite an amazement. It would be nice if we could probably take another tour. It'd be good for us to know what's going on.
We're trying to schedule
and compare.
A tour.
Yeah,
period.
It's pretty awesome.
I've done the tour.
I understand we're talking about this, but it's we keep going back to Parker's and 200 feet. That's actually further than that. You don't always smell chicken cooking there. Trust me. I stop at that store. And that man's wise about where he builds a first-class store. He's number one convenience store in the country for a reason. Thank you.
Other comments?
Yes.
Go ahead.
I from what I'm hearing, the petitioner is doing it better than most, but it doesn't mean it's not a problem. Better than Louisville Road, but it's still only because I think of in the environmental justice community, we talk about the nuisance coming to you or you going to the nuisance. And you go to the nuisance when it's the only place you can afford to live. So you know it exists, right? You know there's something there, but it's the only place you can afford to live. In this case, we're talking about the nuisance coming to you. And at least they need to have the conversation. And in addition to that, with the information that was sent to us, I had heard about the issues in and around Tremont Park at Ogeechee. They're longstanding.
Yes.
And they keep finding the same community. The nuisances yeah. keep finding them. And, you know, and full disclosure, I'm a resident of Carver Village, and I fought hard. I said, not another drop of pollution. And I mean that for us, and I mean that for them. I can't, we no more, right? When do you stop? And I know it has to go somewhere, but then let it find somebody else. It's at some point. When we talk about that EJ community, there's got to be a place in the city of Savannah, if not the city of Savannah, the county of Chatham, where you don't bring a nuisance to somebody. There's got to be a space where you can put something mm-hmm. like this. It's going to cost a bit more, but it's not, I don't think it's worth their lives.
And to your point, Lorraine, that's why I'm very passionate about these rezonings to industrial and light industrial and heavy industrial bordering neighborhoods. That's why we have the flume. That's why we have the comp plan. And we have a designated area for these types of facilities. And I am passionate about just exactly what you said is, you know, it's a difference when you have to live next to the nuisance. You didn't have a choice, but when you're already there and they're trying to put the nuisance next to you, it's a different story. Thank you for saying that.
I do want to clarify though, this is a special use permit, right? This is not a rezoning. So this is zoned for this via the special use permit. Yeah. And as the petitioner mentioned, you know, this was something that the city of Savannah, I believe they said in 2007, wanted them to be there. So can you imagine being the property owner who had the city in favor of you doing this? And then, you know, fast forward 15 years and they're basically being told absolutely not.
I think one of the concerns is the fact that this young man sounds like he really does a good job, but if he were to decide that he doesn't want to do that business anymore and he were to sell it, what would the next facility?
But this is a special use permit. It goes with them, right? It doesn't stay for the next
We can
owner.
Limit it, but it's not necessarily limited, correct?
There's some things, and that's why it's good to postpone this. We can talk with the applicant to see if they're willing to condition it, if possible, so that if it gets sold, the new owner would have to come back and at least get a special use permit. That would do two things. One, it would at least prompt another inspection to make sure they're following the rules, which is really important because a lot of times these things happen and there are rules, but there's never enough resources to do inspections and check on it. So it rules are, you know, these conditions, these rules are only as good as the inspections that go with
right.
them.
And continuing, it gives an opportunity for him to meet with more of the
It gives an opportunity for him to meet with the residents. I just popped out to get the name of the two presidents for the Homeowners Association so that he has that and that he can, you know, coordinate a time to meet with them to look at what some of their concerns are. And during that time, that is a time where, you know, if the city decides to move forward with this, they can condition it and treat it just like, you know, alcohol licenses. You can't automatically keep your alcohol license
yes.
when it gets sold. They have to come back and get a new permit depending on who that buyer is. Because you're right. If this gentleman's passionate about it, I can't say he's not. And, you know, you feel for the story and you know that. But if something happens and he has to sell it, the person buying it could give a flying flip about that. Then they become interested in profit. And this is such a sensitive type of use. It is really important to make sure you get it right. So continuing to give time for the applicant to talk to the neighborhoods to see what additional things can be done. giving us a chance to just double check with regards to how we can condition it so that they'd have to come back if it's sold. Things of that nature is not a bad thing. And I think that also helps the neighborhood out because at least they know that there's going to be another public forum if it gets sold.
Thank you. More discussion? Ready for a motion?
Cole's motion to continue this to the next August meeting, August 5th.
Do you want to continue, just for the applicant, is it better continue it for the August 26th or the September? Because what's the meeting date in September? I know. We've got two meetings in August. We've got the 5th and the 26th. Mm-hmm. So are we talking about like, August the 26th to give the applicant a chance to get with the neighborhood, or are you talking about August the 5th?
We'd like to hear back from them.
Yeah, we'd be better served in the second August meeting.
Okay, so the 26th.
Okay. Bowles, second.
All right, I have a motion and second on the floor. Ms. Amick?
Yes.
Ms. Bowles?
Yes.
Mr. Coles?
Yes.
Ms. Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Notrika?
He left.
Oh, thanks. Mr. Plunk? Ms. Welsh?
Yes.
Mr. Wywoody?
Yes.
I too say yes. All right. That takes care of our regular business for this month. Thank you. We do have one last item, and that is I'm going to appoint folks for the nominating committee. We'll have elections in September, so we need that taken care of. Joe Irvin, before he left, agreed to be the chair of the nominating committee, and I've asked Amanda Wilson and Jeff Notrika to be on it as well. So if you guys have an idea of someone that you think should be serving on the executive committee, please get in touch with one of these folks and share your thoughts with them, and we'll move forward. Irvin Notrika and Amanda Wilson. Do I have a motion for adjournment?
So move, Coles.
Second.
All in favor? Any opposed?
Before we adjourn, I just wanted to I just wanted to introduce Rohan. He did his first presentation, but he's a graduate of Georgia Tech School of Architecture. Yes.
Thank you for being here. Thank you for presenting. You did a great job.
That I would just throw him out.
We'll look forward to seeing you next time.